Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this special board meeting of the State Water Resources Control Board for December 9th, 2005. I am Tam Dodek, Chair of the State Water Resources Control Board. With me are my colleagues to my left, Vice Chair Jerry Secundi, members Art Baggett, and member Richard Katz. Let's get to our first item, which is public forum, where members of the public may address the board on matters that are not on the agenda for today. I have a couple of public forum cards. Quick question, Mr. Richard Morgetson, you designated public comment, but you also indicated Los Osos. Los Osos is on our agenda for today, so if you're speaking, if you're intending to speak about Los Osos, I'm going to move you into that category. Mr. Morgetson, are you here?
I'm talking about a different subject.
All right, then please come on up.
Richard Morgetson. The reason I'm here today is I attended the Santa Barbara Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting and brought it to the attention of the Central Coast Water Board that staff counsel who represented the prosecution team at the recent hearing on the Los Osos fine issue, I think we have a conflict of interest at some level. She also...
Sir, excuse me, let me interrupt you and ask legal counsel for his opinion, because this is a matter that is before the regional board right now. Mr. Lauper?
Well, no, it also has to do with her coming before you, and that's what I'm leading to.
At this point in time, let me go ahead and hear out the gentleman. And, again, what Ms. Dodek is getting to is if the matter specifically concerns something pending before the regional board, it's not something we can hear during public forum. But I think it's important, because he's alleging a conflict, that we at least hear what the gentleman has to say.
Thank you. Please continue.
Okay. After the recall election in Los Osos, the taxpayer watch group was formed and went to court to try to get a temporary restraining order. At that hearing before Judge Hilton in Los Osos, Ms. Okun sat with the taxpayer watch group at the dais, and when district counsel objected, Judge Hilton upheld the objection. Instead of leaving the dais, she continued to sit there, made notes, turned her tablet towards the attorney for the taxpayer watch group, assisting that litigation. Regional board nor state board were a party to that action in court that day.
I'm going to go ahead and cut off the gentleman at this point, because if this type of allegation is what's being made, it's not something that it would concern the propriety of the proceeding before the regional board. That's something he can raise during that regional board hearing, or he can always file a letter with me as the chief counsel for the State Water Resources Control Board. Although I'll have to be frank, at this point in time, that conflict that's being alleged is certainly nothing that would be inappropriate. The regional board staff is in the process of prosecuting. Ms. Okun is the prosecutor. There is a uniformity of interest there that would make it appropriate for her to be at that hearing and share comments. But again, at this point in time, the correct form for that, if he wants to raise that objection, would be before the regional board.
The regional board was not a party to that action that day and had not at that point filed an amicus brief or anything. And then she came to this meeting on the 16th and identified herself as representing Roger Briggs, bringing information to this board with the prosecution hearing coming up at the 1st of December.
Again, at this point in time, if he wants to allege an allegation and somehow have Ms. Okun disqualified at the regional board level, that would be the appropriate forum. The behavior described, at least to this point before this board, is certainly a conduct that would be appropriate for a prosecution attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Lauper. Thank you, Mr. Morgetson. Ms. Lisa Schicker, you also filed a blue card wishing to make a public statement. Again, I have to caution you, if this is regarding Los Osos, that's a matter item, another item on our agenda.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair. I understand the item, and this is a little bit different. Forgive me for just a minute. I was instructed by the Regional Board Chair, Mr. Jeffrey Young, to register my formal objection to your board. And so that's why I'm here, one reason, and I need to speak on something else. He told me it was not appropriate for me to register that complaint with his board, and I need to register it with your board.
And the complaint is?
I attended as a subpoenaed witness and as president of the Los Osos Community Services District and elected official, the ACL hearing on Thursday and Friday, December 1st and 2nd, in San Luis Obispo. And I registered an objection to the fact that Ms. Okun came here on December 16th to speak on Roger Briggs' behalf because I was involved with these negotiations. We were explicitly instructed not to mix the two issues because you're the appellate branch.
Ms. Stricker, is this the same concern that Mr. Margetson just raised?
This is formal from the board, and I was told by the regional board, Jeffrey Young, to bring it to your attention. I was told to register my formal complaint with your board. That's partially why I'm here and why I drove all this distance to reach you today. That's what
and
you
again,
told me
just,
to do.
Just to be clear, Ms. Stricker, the concern is an appearance of a conflict because Ms. Okun is appearing at state water board meetings representing Mr. Briggs, who's the prosecution on the ACL. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, because you're the appellate review of the next step of the ACL complaint. And
well,
I was supposed to register my formal complaints with you. That's what he told me to do, so that's what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, that's duly noted. At the same time, as I indicated before, it would be appropriate for a prosecution attorney to make those kinds of appearances. These are different proceedings. The ACL was not before this board on November 16th. It's not before this board today. It's fair to say that the prosecution has an interest in how this board decides issues pertaining to the loan, and so it would be appropriate for them to appear before this board, just as it's appropriate for Ms. Schicker, whose client is a defendant in that ACL, to appear before this board in both instances.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Schicker. You've brought it to our attention.
Okay, thank you. And then my second comment this morning has more to do with an overall function of your board and staff and how they relate to the Los Osos community and or other communities. I've been having difficulty reaching staff and board, and last time I was here, you politely explained why you were not able to respond to me, and I appreciate that. But the concern I'm having is that your public information officer refuses to return my calls as a duly elected official, and he deals completely with the press. We're never noticed of the meetings. We're never noticed of the hearings. We don't receive anything in writing. I don't receive anything in writing about the hearings or the staff reports, although I do call Ms. Cantu and Mr. Rukeyser. I do not receive any response. And I would just like to encourage your board, to encourage your staff, to improve their communications with duly elected officials in the state of California. I would appreciate it, and I would be more than willing to work with them in any way possible. But dealing through the press and getting improper information and incorrect information or hearsay is very difficult for me to bring back to my board and my community. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rick Rumpel. And I believe you have Mr. Curtis. I apologize in advance for mangling everyone's names. Thank you. On the same subject matter, I would assume.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Dodek, Vice Chair Secundi, Member Katz, Member Baggett. My name is Rick Rempel. I'm a professional geologist. I help my clients clean up contaminated sites and close their cases so their properties can be placed back into productive use. One of my clients, after cleaning up his site in Monterey, asked the Central Coast Regional Board to close his case. The executive officer denied closure. My client appealed to you, and that petition was dismissed by Ms. Cantu. At my request, I was provided a memorandum by Mr. Ted Cobb that was the basis for Ms. Cantu's dismissal. Now, if all I had to go on was the information in that memorandum, I might agree with her decision. Unfortunately, and much to my consternation, that memorandum did not reflect what was in the record. That memorandum drew a conclusion that there was free product at the site based on 5 data points between September 2002 and December 2004. That data missed literally hundreds of data points in soil and groundwater from numerous wells, borings, and other testing that tell a completely different story. Mr. Cobb's memorandum is clear that technical staff were consulted only informally. I verified with the technical staff that they had not been provided a copy of the record to review and that their informal comments were based on those five data points. I immediately sent a letter asking that the petition be reopened so the entire record could be reviewed. In his November 15 response, Mr. Michael Laufer stated, "Dismissals of petitions are never reopened." Now, I know something about the petition process. After I left the Central Coast Regional Board in the late 1980s to join the State Board, I had two principal assignments as a senior engineering geologist. I was the SLIC program manager, and I was lead on writing technical reports for petitions. I think James Giannopoulos, who's in the room today, can verify that I wrote and supervised writing of more petition technical reports than any other technical staff at the board to date. I also understand the logic in not wanting to reopen a petition. It's very similar to not wanting to reopen closed contaminant site cases. Reopening seems to set a bad precedent and has seemingly the potential to reopen Pandora's box. But contaminant sites can be and are reopened when new information comes to light. Quite frankly, I was very looking forward to your staff's technical review. The facts are compelling for closure of this case in light of the whole record. My client's site has been investigated over 20 years and remediated. Groundwater beneath the site is not designated for municipal use. Residual contaminants are degrading rapidly. There are no exposure pathways. And the city bought the property and turned it into permanent open space as a municipal park. If the regional board wants my client to continue to what appears to be endless monitoring that has no purpose, the arguments for closure here are based on technical facts as they relate to board policies. The petition process is one of the most important charges of this board. That process should always give the petitioner benefit of the doubt in allowing proper review by knowledgeable staff of the entire record, especially when the issues relate to the technical interpretation of the facts. That, in my estimation, is due process. I would ask this board to direct staff to reverse the dismissal and allow proper review of the record. If the board's administrative procedures preclude reversing the executive officer's dismissal regardless of any other consideration, then I would submit there is something fundamentally wrong with those procedures. I want to thank the board for allowing me this forum, and I would hasten to add that nothing I have said should be interpreted as detracting from the great respect I have for your staff, and that particularly includes Mr. Laufer, his staff, and technical staff of the board.
Thank you. Mr. Curtis?
Distinguished board members, thank you for taking the time to listen to our appeal for better judgment. I was verbally promised a fresh look from geologists. When our appeal was denied, we thought it was reviewed by geologists as promised. However, the analysis was done by staff on an informal administrative level. Vital scientific data that is extremely important in our case was omitted. The report did not contain the exhaustive scope of work supervised by professional geologists and engineers over two decades that brings us to our current acceptable level of cleanup. This crucial information was simply ignored. I have met my obligations for almost 20 years since we discovered a problem that began long before I bought the site in 1974. My goal has always been to be a responsible citizen, to correct the old environmental problem, and to prevent new ones. The record confirms our success in all three counts. We are asking for a proper review of all scientific data by registered geologists who would be impartial in their review and analysis. If it is not done, that means we have spent $600,000 to date for nothing. My petition, if my petition is dismissed based on incomplete, non-technical review of the record, due process is denied. Please correct this mistake and get my case in the hands of the right people. I ask that you match my integrity by doing the right thing. Thank you very much for listening to my appeal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Laufer, please address the concerns that were raised.
I won't go into the specifics of this particular petition. However, as the board members are well aware, we have a detailed petition process, and the board's review standards are not review for every single error or review to exercise its policy judgment on every single case de novo over the regional boards. Instead, review by the board is only appropriate for substantial issues appropriate for state board review. This particular petition was dismissed for failing to raise those issues. There are a number of things the board should keep in mind. This isn't a... What this does is this allows the responsible party to go back before the regional board, continue with additional data collection if necessary to justify the case to them. There's no deprivation of due process, if you will. In addition, if they feel very strongly that their technical case is so strong, they always have recourse in a court of law. However, your staff exercise their responsibility under the petition regulations, determine that the issue did not raise substantial issues appropriate for state board review, and the decision of the executive director was to dismiss it. This board generally on matters loses jurisdiction upon dismissal of a petition. You do have ongoing authority for own motion review. However, the advice that our legal office gave to Ms. Cantu and that Ms. Cantu, after considering the record, concurred with was that this particular matter was simply not appropriate for review because it could go back to the regional board, and they are always free to remake their case before the regional board with additional data to address the regional board's concerns.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Laufer. We're on now to the consent agenda. There's been a request to take item number one off consent. So we are left with item number two on consent. Is there a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? It's so moved. We're now on...
On the matter we were just discussing about the...
You guys who are leaving the room, you want to stick around or you want to just leave?
I understand the regional board still retains jurisdiction and that there's an appeal to the regional board. I'm just a little concerned in terms of the what sounds like two wildly different sort of presentations, and I'd appreciate if the executive director could just take another look to make sure that we had all the data in making the dismissal, and if you're happy with it, that's fine, but I'd appreciate if you just take another look at it and look at the questions the gentleman raised.
I'll be happy to do so.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say our executive officer is suffering from laryngitis, not a strength of commitment to the issue. Because everyone who's used to Celeste being much more outspoken, I want to clarify that. So.
I actually did say I'd be happy to look into it and get back to you.
And we actually skipped the introduction of the staff. My apologies. Chief Counsel Michael Laufer, Executive Director Celeste Cantu, Chief Deputy Tom Howard, Acting Deputy Beth Giants, Acting Clerk to the Board, Salika Potter, and her assistant, Carmen Sennebeck. Right. We also skipped over what would have been the executive director's report. Did you have something quick to say, or we can...
I would like to take a few minutes to have Tom Howard make a short presentation on our recent review of the use of science in our decision-making.
Thank you.
Board members, for the record, my name is Thomas Howard. We recently released, in September of 2005, a report called Role of Science and Engineering in Decision-Making Within California State and Regional Water Boards. And I think we've made copies of that available to the board members, but if they haven't seen it, we'd be happy to send you an additional copy. The thing that was the impetus for this particular report was a March 23, 2005 memorandum to the chairman of the State Water Resources Control Board, in which the secretary of CalEPA asked the board to work with the agency to assure, this is a quote, to assure the appropriate integration of science in decision-making, including policies, regulations, basin plans, and permits. The CalEPA secretary has also sent a letter to the legislature indicating his intent to institute an evaluation process using the University of California to understand the current role that science plays in the decisions reached within the boards, departments, and offices of CalEPA. Well, with this particularly increased interest in science, we thought that it would be a good time to review the use of science at the board itself. So we hired Bill Vance, who was a retired annuitant, PhD, had been working in a number of different programs at CalEPA and at the BDOs, and asked him to, but he'd never worked at the water board, and asked him to take a fresh look at the water board and the science that's used in making water board decisions. And that's the basis of the report. The report itself goes through each of the board's major programs and describes how decisions are made within each of those programs. And in general, when you complete the full report, generally, I think, the report indicated that the board made effective use of science to inform its decisions. That was the sort of the general. But he did have some recommendations, and I wanted to run through those quickly. Basically, he felt the recommendations fell into four categories. The first category is that the regional boards acknowledge their limitations in scientific expertise, and they make four proposals to address these issues. One is to set up a blue ribbon science panels to provide advice. One is to create a science advisory panel, a single one, to provide technical review and comment of the documents that they prepare. One is to create a pool of in-house experts that would be available to the regional boards from the state board on an as-is basis, as-needed basis. It would be something like how we use our legal staff, where the legal staff are employed here at the board, but at the state board, but then become available to the regions for support. And the fourth would be to set up an expeditious mechanism for consulting contracts with various experts in other state federal agencies. The second recommendation is that the Regional Water Boards, Division of Water Rights, SWAMP, and GAMMA, among other programs, highlight the need for better data and information in decision making. In general, the regional boards felt that the information, the data that's available to them to do things like TMDLs and other decisions of related nature is, not as robust as they'd like it to be. So the third recommendation is that they felt there should be a board-wide effort to address the need for determining water quality objectives and effluent limitations. We have approximately 100 or so water quality objectives in the state, maybe slightly more than that. We have the priority pollutants, maybe 100 or so there, and then there are a few others that are found in the basin plans. But there are You know, there are literally, of course, hundreds of thousands of compounds in the environment, and the regional boards encountered various ones at different times, and they have little or no ability to know what are appropriate concentrations for these things, both for permitting and for determining whether the water body is impaired by their presence. And the last recommendation is that the board should put more focus on continuing education and professional self-improvement for the professional staff at the board. Those were the four general recommendations. We'll be talking about those in exec and having some meetings with the board members to say how we're going to deal with these recommendations over the next year or so. That was all I had to say on the report at this point. Does the board have any questions?
Is the report available on our website?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
I'll wait for the meeting to talk about it.
Okay. Thank you.
Now is the time and place for consideration of a proposed resolution to withdraw funding for the Los Osos Community Services District wastewater collection, treatment, and disposal project. All persons wishing to comment on the substance or factual basis of this matter should stand and take the oath. I have six comment cards, including staff. Please raise your hand and repeat after me. I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury. I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury. Thank you. We'll now hear the staff presentation. For those in the audience, this item is not an adjudicative proceeding. The board is not considering the rights, duties, or obligations of the Los Osos Community Service District. The board, as a lender, is considering whether to reallocate loan funds it has previously made available to the district. Mr. Pohemas, you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Darryl Pohemas, Assistant Division Chief of the Division of Financial Assistance. On November 16, 2005, the State Board adopted Resolution 2005-0083, which specified conditions of which the board would reconsider the loan for Los Osos. On November 23, 2005, the district by letter and by districts, the Los Osos Community Services District's Resolution 2005-49 informed the board that they had declined the conditions as set forth in the board's resolution. Staff does here now recommend to the board that the board withdraw the loan commitment for Los Osos. And I would like to note that by the board taking that action, that this does not effectively terminate the loan contract, but will withdraw the funding available to it. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Polinas.
A couple comments or questions. Obviously, I assume the way you have stated it means that they also can apply at a future date should they have a project that goes through all the local permitting process, go through all the processes that Tri-W went through and all the rest, they are still eligible to apply along with everyone else for money in the future, and assuming they pay back the money that they owe us.
Correct, all of those.
Okay. Is it also the recommendation, part of the recommendation, that in withdrawing the funds then be allocated to the variety of projects that are listed on Table 1 in the binder?
Correct. Now, I should clarify that other projects not on Table 1 may also receive this funding, but those are the projects that staff currently identified as most likely to receive it based on their current state of readiness to proceed.
Okay, so, and we're talking about everything from North Marin to La Cañada, Front Ridge, Hayward, Inland Empire, Yucaipa, Petaluma, Lompoc, Yucaipa Valley Water District, Small Community Wastewater, that whole list on there are all people who have projects that are in the pipeline that are eager to improve water quality in their community and have been awaiting funding because the program's oversubscribed.
Correct. In fact, I would make a point that list is a very short list of those that are most likely to receive funding within a period of 3 to 6 months, that we actually have a much larger list of approximately $700 million of projects in various stages. So this is really a short list compared to what is out there actively working towards receiving loan funds from the program.
A short but eager to proceed list.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Right. With that, we'll begin with Ms. Schicker.
By the way, just for procedural, I'll move that recommendation. Since it's not on consent, you need a motion in order to have the discussion. I'll move the recommendation that Darren made.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I will second that.
Good morning, Board. My name is Lisa Schicker. I'm the president of the Los Sotos Community Services District and here to speak on behalf of my community today. I traveled from San Luis Obispo this morning to reach you to explain a few things to you and to make a few comments.
Excuse me, we need to set the timer.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you for this opportunity to speak and explain a little bit about why we were unable to accept the proposal as written. The state's conditions for the loan were many, and each of them were very carefully considered by our board. We are totally committed to water quality. We're totally committed to doing the right thing for our community, and we are interested in the state revolving fund loan program. Of course we are. Contrary to much what you may think or what other people may think, the CSD directors were very willing to consider the alternative that you put before us. A couple of the conditions were pretty much impossible or perhaps illegal. We weren't able to do them. We also revisited the critical factors that must be considered when evaluating any potential wastewater treatment plan, specifically long-term effectiveness in meeting treatment and water supply and conservation goals, impacts of cost and affordability, and the potential risks and the deferred costs. When we compared Tri-W to the other alternative projects, we really still believe that we can effectively use the state revolving fund loan money in a better fashion, and we need a different project to do that. So even the proponents of the Tri-W project, which is the downtown upstream from the bay in the ditch, right upstream from the bay next to the library and our community center, they recognize its inadequacy to provide sufficient drinking water to the growing community. That's a great concern of us, and we believe it's a goal of yours. Another goal of yours is sustainability. This project was not sustainable. It never was. It had deferred costs. And we're really looking forward to going forward with a better project and coming back before your board with a loan that will meet more water quality goals for the money. Our agenda, I want to assure you, is aggressive and ambitious. Just this week, even though we've had 22 agendized meetings in 2 months, televised agendized meetings, and attended ACL hearings and been here twice, we have also agendized water conservation, septic tank management program, and pumping of the upper aquifer as our initial goals to get going on right away. Our agenda is continuing at this time. We also intend to do this time. We want to do it right. We've never done an affordability study for this project. It never was done. To meet EPA goals, a socioeconomic study and affordability should have been done. It was never done. We intend to do that. We intend to do a risk assessment. We intend to secure community support for this project so we aren't coming back before you here again with contention. We want to have the votes, whether they be advisory, 218, four-fifths vote of a board or whatever, but we're going to get the votes so we come back with some unity and consensus, which we didn't have, obviously. We want an accurate and complete revenue plan, and we want a project that meets more water quality goals that we both share. Water, wastewater treatment, water conservation, saltwater intrusion, groundwater recharge, et cetera. I would encourage you and your board to work cooperatively with us and increase the oversight so we don't improve our relationship and our ability to secure a water quality project for Los Sotos. And I thank you for this time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dan Bleski.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. I'm Dan Bleski, Interim General Manager with Los Sotos Community Services District. And I just have a couple of comments, and then I've got just a couple of things to fill you in on. And can you hear me okay? And one question. Although it's apparent that the decision has already been cast with the motion and second, seemingly shortly, the claims have started on this project, And I'm confident that we'll be successful in the claim that we stated before and currently put before your chief counsel. I'd like to take one last opportunity to offer some food for thought. I know last time we expressed a lot of our contentions and our disappointments, but I'm not here to rehash all that stuff. I believe we understand our differences, but there's been little, if any, discussions of where we absolutely agree, and really, these are really simple, and my board president has touched on many of those. We agree that the remediation of the groundwater in the Los Osos groundwater basin is necessary. We agree, despite how it may have been represented in the papers, that construction of a viable, cost-effective, sustainable, and energy-efficient wastewater system will be of great benefit in achieving this goal. And most importantly, we all agree that doing this is in the best interest of the ultimate objective. That being, we all desire to restore and assure the health of the Morro Bay estuary. That's what it's all about. Protect the water in the estuary. It's unfortunate that our two organizations have not been able to build on the passion for these common goals, but it's never too late. We've worked hard, and if we had your support, we could actually work this thing out with your staff, you'd see us work even harder. And you have a community that backs you. If we could roll back the clock to September 27, 2005, and started a process focused on constructing a team of all the stakeholders, this team would have easily been able to address all requirements, overcome all obstacles, and achieve all of our common interests and goals. But to go back to September 27th would be futile, just as focusing on the past 30 years. We are constantly challenged by the past in Los Osos. 30 years of frustration. It's a lot of frustration. We can either live in that history, or we can make history. But we can't do it alone. 30 years of frustration is a whole bunch. We saw that even at the regional board last week. But there's one more point to ponder. One of the things of 23 years of military service, you learn what it is to achieve victory when you overcome an objective. You have to visualize it. Football coaches will tell you the same thing. And all of you here and anybody that has ever been challenged to achieve a goal has done the same thing. You've got to visualize it. But with 30 years of frustration, has anybody ever really gotten to the point now where we've got so mired in the past that we've not been able to recognize the faces of the players that may actually put this thing together? I'd say that they're actually in this room. I have one question for Chief Counsel. The letter that we received yesterday, is that a denial of our claim?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It was very difficult to determine that. Simple yes or no would have been sufficient. The other thing is on the collection system, we're ready to go on the collection system right now. And we've even offered your staff to talk about out your funding, because I understand federal funding, how it works. The freeing up of $46 million in funding for other projects, and then looking to the out year as we strove towards constructing the treatment portion of this project, would have been it was what we looked at when we had our first negotiation. And that made a whole lot of sense, and that funding would have been available. But since construction started now, we have little choice, seeing as how the oversight failed, to acknowledge some of these issues. But like I said, it's still not too late to fix this thing, and I would ask that you reconsider the funding of our collection system, as it is part of getting where we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Please stay. I believe there are some questions for you.
Mr. Blakeslee, you're quoted.
Blesky, please.
Blesky, excuse me. Mr. Blesky, you're quoted in today's San Luis Obispo Tribune is saying that $488,000 in attorney's fees were paid with state revolving fund money. Is that true?
Yes.
What makes you think you can pay attorney's fees, especially losing attorney's parties out of state revolving funds?
There's no prohibition of it. We consulted with counsel, and also your public affairs officer said it was okay, so we figured it was okay.
I don't believe that that is true, sir.
Mr. Segundi, it's what I read in the paper, and quite frankly, that's been how we've been receiving a tremendous amount of our communication.
Did all the district directors vote for this?
Did all the district directors vote for this? Yes, they did. As a matter of fact, Mr. Segundi, if you will recall, this system of what we're now faced with, including these claims I drafted 6 weeks ago, two weeks after I got here. It's hard to tell time anymore. Now, the other thing is that the negotiations for settlement, Measure B lost. It made it to the ballot. The CSD lost. It's simple. We lost and we had to pay. Now, we entered into those negotiations. Measure B on the initiative, the initiative was on the ballot. We lost. The thing is that what we had with Measure B was we were considering this option until state staff and Assemblyman Blakesley, to his credit, we were able to get to the table. And it made a whole lot of sense not to pursue this thing. However, it became quite apparent on the 16th of November that we were going to get nowhere. And this measure does protect the citizens of Los Osos. It also protects the estuary, in our opinion. The other thing is about claims. Claims were already in process within a week after I arrived. We held all of those until recently. And that is the truth, Mr. Segundi, is that it does not behoove us to fight, but we have no choice.
Do you feel there are any restrictions whatsoever on state revolving funds, or can they be used for any purpose?
Do I?
Yes, you.
If it says I can't use it for that, then I won't use it for that. But like I say, counsel says that there's no restrictions for legal fees. These were costs due to legal fees directly attributable to this project.
Just one question before you clarify, Michael.
Yes, sir.
How many of the claims of the contractors have you paid?
We haven't paid it. The claims?
How many bills submitted by the contractors?
We paid one.
And how much is outstanding?
Probably about $4.07 million.
Okay, so you paid the lawyers but not the contractors.
That's correct.
Sums it all up. Thanks.
I don't think it does, Mr. Katz.
And the point that I just wanted to clarify for the record, Mr. Blesky, when you say counsel said you can spend, that was the district's counsel, correct?
Yes, sir, it was. But, I'd like to reemphasize how we're hearing your communications.
My guess is that's the same way we're hearing communications from the district, because if I remember correctly, last time we were here, the district testified and their counsel testified that they had not made a decision on how to proceed on Prop B, and we find out later through court documents that two weeks previous to our meeting here, they had already signed the paperwork in terms of dismissing the Prop B measure. So we hear things a variety of ways ourselves.
Mr. Katz, I think I explained that. We held those papers.
We are not going to debate this issue. Thank you. Those are the only cards I have from representatives of the district itself. The remainder cards are of citizens representing themselves, expressing their opinions and needs with respect to this issue. So I'm going to limit them to 3 minutes each, starting with Mr. Al Barrow.
That's outrageous. I was told 5 minutes. It's tough luck, isn't it? That's your attitude. That says it all.
Sir, we can shorten the time even more.
That's your choice. My name is Al Barrow. Season's greetings. Oh, you did shorten it, huh? Okay.
So far you have 3 minutes.
Season's greetings to the citizens of California. My topic is sewer terrorism. Could somebody fix this mic? So there we go. Maybe that'll work. The time schedule 00131 is based on illegal data gathered from illegal wells. I'm testifying under oath from pollution conduits in the groundwater, affidavits from Professor Ruhr, Glenn Stillman, professional witnesses, that these wells constructions were illegal, and they were conduits of nitrates into the groundwater The monitoring data that your board based this project on is illegal and false. The 1994 U.S. EPA evaluation of Los Osos by Jim Kreisel and his team of five was misrepresented by Kuykendall, Liz Jane, Cheryl McGovern, Gerhard Huebner, and Sora Marx. The assessment district requirement for the state revolving fund loan in the spring of 2000 cost each property owner $3,800 per unit. There's a lot invested in this, and that was what we had to do to get your low-interest loan. The value engineering added MBR and ridiculously other expensive things. I'm going to have to cut my talk short, but I will say that the Regional Water Quality Control Board 3 inferred with the community advocacy group, interfered with us and our guests a number of times, including Graham Knowles from US EPA, National Demonstration Project, and others, depriving the community of valuable, truthful information. Not only that, Graham Knowles, Gerhard Huebner no longer works for us, and he also called the dean for the engineering school at UC Davis and asked them to prevent Dr. George Savonagos, leading wastewater expert, to come to the community and express the truth about this situation. A state violated the Coastal Act when they approved a sewer on an environmentally sensitive habitat area. You're stepping all over state laws, many of the state laws. I'm submitting that. They're all in here for the record if you want to scroll forward. We have exhausted all administrative remedies, and we were left with no other choice but an initiative. In 2002, we objected to the site, the changing of to a conventional plant. The sewer plan is so very, very, very flawed that it would take years and millions of dollars to correct the oversights and the mistakes, including lack of slope for flow, for one. Case advocates advocates a reasonable sewer fee. By your own 2002 study, the average for communities our size are about $25 a month. Why are we going to have to pay $250 a month? Because you're gentrifying our community.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jack Hunter.
I drove 8 hours for 3 minutes. Comes around, goes around.
Good morning, gentlemen of the board, Madam Chair. My name is Jack Hunter. I'm a resident of the community of Los Osos. The speech I worked up for you this morning has been altered now by circumstances here. I appreciate your indulgence in listening to some aspects of this. I guess I'm here today representing my community in the sense of maybe a third of the population, perhaps half, that can... I've never seen a situation like this before where so many people in the community are so interested in solving this problem. I doubt if there's anyone in town who can't lay out for you the basic workings of a wastewater treatment facility on a cafe napkin. It's a remarkable situation. And yet none of us can agree on how to go forward. Well, we can agree, the community. Unfortunately, now we don't have you on board. We have elected a new board for a new project. We're moving at great speed. We have a number of studies available to us to make good decisions, which, frankly, was not available when this plant was designed. This Tri-W site is a hugely flawed project. It doesn't do anything for sustainability, and if you examine your website, you'll see that there's barely a page of your website that isn't pushing the sustainability of all future operations that govern with respect to policy of your board. And it's appalling to us that we can't come to some understanding of how this community could go forward, that how we could not have to repay the money that you have given us, but in fact a new loan be set up that allows us to achieve the goals that we so desperately desire. None of us want to continue with our lives involved in the sewer project, I assure you. But the facility that's going to be built, whether it lasts 30 or 50 years, for most of us, that's virtually forever. And to have it wrong, to have it have El Nino storm events blow through the project into the bay, to have Air Pollution Control District fining us for the odors that come from it, It's a hugely wrong project for our area, and we believe we have better solutions available to us, and we'd like to implement them. I hope you reconsider your agenda item and give us back the quality of the loan that you had given us previously that we might go forward. Thank you.
I'm going to take a moment here and tighten up the speaker's microphone there. Mr. Richard Margetson is up next.
Before you start the clock, I have a question. I think there may be another typo in the resolution. If this is the one you're going to adopt today, under item 6, A and B, at the end of A, it says or. Is that supposed to be or?
Yes, it should be.
Okay.
Basically, before the time starts, the November 16th resolution gave the district two options, continue as originally planned, or other options were laid out that would satisfy the state and federal requirements and give the board comfort allowing projects to go forward with modifications until subsequent actions could be taken.
Okay.
Which, by the way, and on my time, not on the gentleman's time, was one of the things that always confused us about the rejection of the proposal, the fact that it was an or and not an and. So.
Well, before my time starts then, I think one of the directors had a conversation with Mr. Polhemus, who indicated that it was and.
Well, first of all, the only thing that I don't know anything, I don't know if that's true or not true, doesn't really concern me, because the only thing that actually matters is the resolution that was adopted by the board, and the or is pretty clear. And the official resolution.
Would Mr. Boynes like to comment on the?
He doesn't need to comment.
No.
I'm commenting.
Well, it was part of the
only thing that
the information
matters,
that was brought to the community before they decided on it.
The only thing that matters is what's in the resolution.
Okay.
And it always had an or in it, by the way.
I know it always had an or in it, but Mr. Polhemus indicated that it was supposed to be an and. And if he had input on it, I think that's appropriate that the community had that misunderstanding. At a public meeting. Okay. Okay. Richard Margetson. Mr. Secundi, at the last meeting, you stated that the water board had spent an inordinate amount of time trying to save this loan for Los Osos. I'd like a definition of what an inordinate amount of time is to try to help a community with the highest per capita project in the country. At this point, $205 a month, that's going to completely destroy the economic viability of a community. Back in 1983, resolution 8313, in 1988, the discharge prohibition. In 97, the CSD was formed. During that whole period, state never or regional never came down on the town of Los Osos to implement any measures other than the discharge prohibition. The population of Los Osos in 1980 census was just under 11,000. Now it's just under 15,000. And now all of a sudden you want to add septic tank pumping to a proposal for Los Osos? On your watch, on this board's watch, while the CSD was in power, or was since the CSD's been in power, there's been a total manipulation of the water supply in Los Osos for the purpose of building a sewer and a collection and a treatment facility in Los Osos. Nitrate monitoring, the last 20 years, even with the increased population of over 4,000, which is a 35% increase, has been pretty static. And our question is, why wouldn't you want to spend as much time as possible to try to salvage a community's future and accomplish the cleanup of the water? You said your main purpose is clean water. I think there should be an addendum to that, clean water and the interests of the people in a community that cannot afford the highest per capita project in the country. $205 a month. If any one of you went home and got a letter in the mail that your gas bill was going up $205 a month, you'd be protesting and trying to salvage something, too. Thank you. Is that my time? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Alan Perman? Ms. Oken, I have a card for you stating if needed. Okay. Thank you.
For me in particular? Hi. Thank you, Board, for hearing my comments. I'm a citizen of Los Osos. I've lived there 2 years. A while back, I became aware of the controversy. I love the bay, as do most people who live in Los Osos, irrespective of their site on the sewer. The sewer is our back bay. Currently, a majority of the people in Los Osos have decided the appropriate location for the sewer would be out of town. That is based on a variety of reasons, but even though they are citizens and are not necessarily trained, most of them are aware of the scientific information and manipulation of scientific information that's brought about the inevitability of the Tri-W site. And so Samuel Clemens, who would remain Samuel and Clemens in Los Osos because in Baywood he wouldn't be able to shout Mark Twain. He would have to shout, there's a little mud on my foot. The bay never empties quite as deep as the Mississippi. That's one of the reasons it doesn't flush well. Yet, nevertheless, scientific data has shown that the moratorium has actually worked and that nitrates levels have stabilized in the drinking water. And so, from a scientific perspective, it would be a perfect time to reconsider and put in a sewer that does not necessarily risk the bay. I heard some ringing. Is there did the angel?
Half time.
I thought an angel got their wings. How does a regulatory agency know when it's lost its way? Does a sister agency approach it in the hallway and discreetly say, your mandate has slipped, or maybe there's a trail of data stuck to your shoe? I mentioned Sam Clemens because he's famous for saying lies, damn lies, and statistics. I do have a little bit of a background in science, and I did discuss with Dr. Kitts, who produced the only considered the only valid scientific study on the health of the bay, and he gave us information that indicated that had the Tri-W site sewer been built 2 years previously, there would have been a fractional 0.1% change in the health of the bay. And the reason I bring this up is because I believe the discussion has moved away from science and into politics. And in politics, it's legitimate to run scare tactics, to shout out your opposition, and to bring in others to support your side. So I hope you can take this entire experience as a learning experience. Los Osos is unique, and if you have not lost your way, you would consider the entire history. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We've had a motion made and second, and then we listened to public comments. Are there any other discussion?
Just a corner.
It's a tough decision for me, but I'll be voting in a minute. I just want to make a couple of quick comments. I think, one, I've spent the better part of my youth as a LAFCO member, a county supervisor for 8 years in a small rural county. Even in that life over 20 years ago, I spent some time having some debates with some of the state board staff. I had no idea at that point I'd ever be in this position. Over some clean water grants, and some of our staff may remember the Mount Boyan clean water grants. I truly do appreciate the pain and the challenges I think you face, particularly at the local level today. I think, you know, the taxing, all the issues, the way that we've set up our entire financing in this state is a disaster for local governments and those who are trying to survive there. And for all of those of us who live there, I mean, I'd be faced in Mariposa with a very similar situation probably in 3 years when our permit's renewed for wastewater. Yet, I guess there's a much broader issue from my perspective here, and it's public policy. If we were to do what I think the community service district is asking us, it would potentially be an absolute catastrophe statewide. If we would always allow second thoughts and second guessing after somebody's made a commitment because to control how water quality requirements and standards are set in this state, the environmental backsliding and degradation would potentially be enormous. If every time a majority changed on a locally elected body that did not like the commitment of the previous a previous body on some permit or some environmental issue and they thought they could then change their mind, I think the potential is pretty obvious of where that could go. I think, to me it's an analogy, you know, when I was a builder, if I was building a house for someone and had a contract, we had all the engineering, the building permits, the county zoning, and so on, all of a sudden a new county board of supervisors said, well, we want to change that. That's a mistake. We want to change the zoning. That house is now illegal because the lot size density just doubled or tripled, or you had to have a more lot size or bigger setbacks, and you've already got the thing on the ground that started. I mean, what would you do? You could go to court. The remedied county would at the minimum have to pay damages for all the construction cost, time, and probably pain and suffering and everything else in that case, if not have an injunction to stop it. So I see we're in a bind here. We have that commitment. A project started. A previous board made that commitment. Anything we're doing today doesn't preclude reapplying. You have a new design, come back with it. But I think the broader policy being sent here is just as frustrated as I know you all are, and I really am fairly convinced in my mind that there's not bad faith here from an environmental degradation point, but it's been going on 30 years. A commitment was made. Funds have been expended. The project's begun. It's met the requirements. So I'll have to support the motion.
I was just going to add, as we said earlier, that obviously a new project is more than welcome to come back and apply, just like other projects do, number one. Number two, there's nothing that precludes Los Osos from moving ahead if they have a better way to do it that doesn't fit the site that the state funded. They have the ability to move ahead. There's nothing that precludes that. And to this day, I still don't understand the rejection of the resolution by this board, which gave the district two options on how to proceed. With great flexibility and with the assemblyman's help, it was our attempt to try and get over a difficult patch and give people an opportunity to move forward, but that was turned down. And while I don't think ARC has necessarily been, I agree with you, I don't think there's been bad faith in terms of the environmental concerns. I think there has been some bad faith by council and others in terms of representations before this board. Having said that, though, that, you know, I am excited about the number of communities, and there's at least a dozen on this list that are dying to start a project that will improve water quality. So when we look at water quality, we're concerned about Morro Bay, but we're also concerned about water quality statewide. And there are a dozen communities now that are going to be able to take this money that has been sitting there waiting during this whole process and actually start doing things to improve water quality almost immediately in some cases. And for that, you know, I'm supporting the motion.
It's really and truly a very sad day. I have no doubt that the citizens of Los Osos desire the same water quality that the state board does. But you have put yourselves now in a position with the loss of the state revolving fund, and that is how I'm going to vote, to having to go out and get additional funding. You have two huge obstacles in your way. One is Proposition B. And perhaps the confusion between what a majority is and a plurality is, but your Proposition B calls for a majority to select a new site, basically. And given the fractious nature of your community over the last 30 years, I think the ability to get a single site and a majority of the people to agree to that is very problematic. Secondly, you seem to be very, very much bent on, quote, the out-of-town site. And yet you do not own the land. You do not have an option for the land. You have no permits for that land from the county, from the coastal community, from the regional district. And you've already been told that a number of neighbors are preparing to sue if indeed you try to move the site there. Your county supervisor, who has tried to tell you that the Tri-W site was the best possible alternative, has stated publicly that it will probably take 10 to 12 years to get an additional site. That's an incredibly long period of time, and in that sense, I think we are all losers. We are looking at a very long delay for the community of Los Osos, and that's why I say, indeed, it is a very sad day. But as Mr. Katz said, there's nothing to prevent you from going out and getting additional funding from different sources and starting your process again, trying to get your permits and your land.
Thank you, Mr. Secundi. I concur with you. It is indeed a sad day, and this is not an easy decision. It's a decision that I think none of us wants to make, but we are here. The decision is in front of us. We are looking at a commitment that was made, a contract, a commitment from the state for funding for a specific project, which is now, we're told, not going to proceed. So we have, as much as I respect local decisions, local authority, local electoral outcomes, the state also has a responsibility with respect to these funds, with respect to the use of these funds to address water quality on a statewide basis. So I need to join with my colleague as well in supporting the resolution to withdraw the funding for Los Osos. With that, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. That gets us now to our two remaining items. For those in the audience, I have roughly 9 comment cards for the swamp item and about 30 for the septic systems. So we're going to go ahead and hear from staff on the swamp item first. Ms. Connor.
Salika, can you start the PowerPoint? Good morning. My name is Al Connor, and I'm a senior environmental scientist in the Division of Water Quality. I'm here today as the coordinator of the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, referred to as SWAMP. The purpose of this item is to brief you on the preliminary findings from our ongoing external scientific review. We've been working with an external panel, the Scientific Planning and Review Committee, or the SPARC. What I'd like to do is give you a brief summary, including the background of the SPARC process, and then I'll introduce Dr. Brock Bernstein, who's the spokesperson for the SPARC, and he'll present their preliminary findings and recommendations. SWAMP was initiated in fiscal year 2000-2001 in response to AB 982, and it directed the water boards to design and implement a comprehensive water quality monitoring program. the legislature asked that the program be comprehensive, addressing all water bodies and all beneficial uses. They asked that ambient water quality data collected by the water boards be coordinated, of high quality, comparable, and easily accessible to the public. In a report to the legislature, we proposed in November of 2000 a comprehensive program and requested $59 to $115 million annually and 87 to 132 additional staff positions. We currently receive $3.4 million in contract funds and have 17 positions. Our funding is provided by the monitoring surcharge on the waste discharge permit fees. The existing goals in the LEDGE report do not match the fiscal reality or our current program. And so SWAMP has been developing more realistic short-term objectives or priorities and a longer-term implementation strategy. We've developed and are implementing a 10-year strategic plan that's consistent with new federal guidance and state monitoring and assessment programs. EPA has accepted the strategy, and you have been provided with a copy. The strategy includes the 10 elements necessary for a science-based monitoring and assessment program. One of these 10 elements is programmatic evaluation. Our vision is to conduct periodic reviews of each element of our program to determine whether or not, first, the program is being implemented as designed, how well it serves water quality decision needs of the state, and its scientific validity. The SWAMP program, in consultation with the SPARC, is conducting our second external review. This involves evaluation of both the state and regional monitoring programs to determine how well each element is being addressed. A critical part of this review for us is determining how to incorporate recommended changes into the program. The SPARC is comprised of independent scientific and technical experts, including representatives from federal and state agencies and academia, with expertise in fields such as monitoring program management, monitoring design, ecology, chemistry, aquatic biology, quality assurance, toxicology, and statistics. The panel consisted of 7 national experts in large-scale monitoring and assessment programs. In addition to being top-notch scientists, all have extensive experience in managing large programs, most with insufficient budgets, that provide useful information to decision makers at both the state and local scale. In other words, they are very successful at doing what we envision with SWAMP. You've been provided with a brief summary of each of their backgrounds. The SPARC process is being coordinated by Dr. Steve Weisberg, the Executive Director of the Southern California Coastal Water Resource Program. His role includes independently forming the committee of experts and facilitating the entire review process, and doing so on a very tight timeline, I would add. He's doing an outstanding job, and I credit him with much of the success of the review. So far, the process has consisted of a 3-day meeting that was facilitated by Dr. Weisberg. The meeting consisted of 2 days of presentations. The presentations on the first day included overviews of the SWAMP program, elements of the SWAMP strategy, and the statewide California Monitoring and Assessment Program. Each regional board representative also gave an overview of his or her individual SWAMP program. The SWAMP program presentations were followed on the second day by short presentations from several of our monitoring collaborators, and the second day ended with perspectives on SWAMP by the regulated community, the environmental community, and US EPA. The third day was a half day of closed deliberations and a half day of panel reporting back to the SWAMP roundtable. Preliminary recommendations have been made by the SPARC and will be summarized in a report that's expected later this month. Staff is in the process of responding to those initial recommendations. A final report will be available in March of 2006 that includes a chapter prepared by Water Board staff on how SWAMP will respond to this external review. The SPARC will reconvene for 2 days in March to review the proposed changes to the program. It has been my privilege to work with the Swamp Roundtable during this process. They have demonstrated outstanding commitment and the skills, technical knowledge, and the cooperative spirit that will ensure our success. What I'd like to do now is introduce Dr. Brock Bernstein to summarize the SPARC's initial findings and recommendations.
Thank you. Welcome, Dr. Bernstein. We appreciate you being here to give us a sneak peek at these recommendations.
Well, thanks very much. And on behalf of the other members of the SPARC, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to talk to the board and also just say, and this isn't part of my formal comments, but to say how much the members of the SPARC enjoyed interacting with Swamp and the staff. And every single one of the SPARC members expressed an interest to continue working with working with the Swamp in whatever capacity they might be required over the next year or two to help implement these recommendations. So we were definitely engaged by the Swamp, and we thought it was a pretty interesting program, and we had a very high regard for the leadership and the staff of the program. We have drafted a report. It has not been released yet, and as you mentioned, I'll be giving you a sneak preview today. What I'd like to do is set the stage a little bit by saying that we were asked to come in and provide a technical review of many aspects of the Swamp, and including specific program designs and elements such as that. And very quickly, we realized that there were some fundamental structural issues at play, and that we thought what the Swamp really needed was more of a programmatic review before we got into some of the technical issues, that certain aspects of the Swamp's goals and structure and the way they operated, their role vis-a-vis other elements of water quality management, needed to be clarified and sort of tuned up before we could dig into more technical issues like should you be sampling this indicator or that indicator. So we thought that the program was clearly a valuable program. It has some notable successes. But we thought that the Swamp has been limited and constrained by some very obvious tensions between the original goals and design, which, as Val noted, were pretty ambitious and comprehensive, and the necessity that it's been faced with to sort of adapt its approach to existing funding levels and staffing levels. And so that tension has never been resolved, and we thought that while the Swamp had done a very good job of adapting to that and being entrepreneurial and creative, that wasn't a long-term strategy. It needed to rethink where it was going and who it was. And so the SPARC's recommendations are more structural in nature, and we thought that what the recommendations would do would set a very firm foundation for the Swamp's success in the future. The other thing that the SPARC members wanted to emphasize was that these recommendations and the findings, some of which point to specific shortcomings of the Swamp in various respects, are not necessarily a failing grade. The members of the SPARC have all been involved with a lot of other programs, all of which have had growing pains, all of which, if they were ultimately successful, went through this sort of a mid-course review and correction. And so we thought that what was really notable was that the Swamp's response to this was completely non-defensive. They really dug in. They grappled with all the issues that we brought up. We thought that this was a good sign for their future success. So the first thing we did was we wanted to make sure that everybody who's sort of interested in this review understood that the Swamp has a number of notable strengths which we think provide the basis for its long-term success. And so it's things like they have a program to actually make sure that data doesn't fall through cracks, that data are of high quality. The staff has the ability to make, silk's purse out of sow's ears. They have the ability to leverage their funding and create relationships, be very entrepreneurial. And, they understand the technical challenges involved. On the other hand, the Swamp is, in many respects, still struggling to meet its initial goals, which were to create a comprehensive monitoring program for all of California with a budget that's actually far less than that. We thought that while certain features that they had been forced to develop, such as an entrepreneurial mindset and being quick on their feet and very adaptive, while they were very useful at the regional level, did not provide a firm basis for success at the statewide level. So we thought that there was a need to outgrow some of these constraints, some of the adaptive mechanisms that they had developed over the last 4 or 5 years. And in order to do that, they have to grapple with some very clear challenges. And it was interesting to me, as sort of the token Californian on this panel, excuse me, to note the reaction of folks like John Maxted from New Zealand and another member from Maryland, which are fairly small sort of areas, to see their reaction to the scale, the scope of California, you know, the deserts, the mountains, the bays, just the sheer magnitude and the number of different sorts of habitats. They kind of came away going, wow, you guys really, you know, you really bitten off a lot here. And I think that was important to see. The other thing that impressed us was that the swamp sits in a fairly complicated management system. And so that really needs to be addressed head on. What is the swamp's role? We also understood that sometimes the swamp was wrestling with beneficial use classifications that didn't always target, you know, the current water quality issues. And so we thought that, you know, some of these things might also need to be addressed. And so these are some of the other challenges that the program is facing and that we get into in our report. We discuss sort of the basis for these sorts of assessments or diagnoses in more detail with examples, and then tie these specifically to the recommendations that we're making. So here's a list of the summary recommendations. I'll let you take a look at these very quickly, and then I'll spend just a minute or two talking about each one in a little more depth. And I think the SPARC wants to emphasize that these recommendations really are a package, that they're mutually supportive, that, for example, reevaluating the program goals and identifying target audiences go hand in hand, that some of these can't really be implemented or addressed without implementing the others. And what we've been encouraged by is the swamp's sort of willingness to take on all of these as a package and not to cherry pick them and say, well, I like this one and I don't like that one. So clearly, I think the elephant in the middle of the room during the whole review process was that the swamp clearly did not have the wherewithal to implement the comprehensive monitoring program that was initially laid out in AB 982 and in the subsequent report to the legislature. And not only that, but some of the design approaches that were described in the report to the legislature for how to go about implementing a comprehensive program may need reevaluating. The technology of monitoring program design has advanced since then. Other regional programs have been initiated in California and elsewhere, and so maybe some of those design approaches needed rethinking. But more particularly, we thought that the swamp needed to really establish its identity with respect to other regional board and state board programs. For example, how can the swamp better support and relate to NPDES and TMDL programs? So these sorts of things have been addressed at the regional level in an ad hoc way based on opportunities within each regional board. But at a statewide level, this was still a question that needs to be addressed. And so a lot of these recommendations have been sort of implemented in various ways at the regional level. The place we think the swamp needs to spend a lot of effort is figuring out how to then develop consistency at the statewide level. We thought that there needed to be some clear authority given to swamp, similar to that given to them with respect to data management and quality control. But that the responsibilities given to swamp should be balanced against the funding available. That swamp needed to have responsibilities that were achievable in the near term, and then the midterm, and then the long term, and very specifically, we thought that this is not a program that could or should be managed top down from Sacramento completely. That it's important to maintain the entrepreneurial spirit, the flexibility and scope of action and decision making at the regional level. Hand in hand with that, the swamp needs to identify more clearly a set of key target audiences and clients, both at the regional level and at the statewide level. We thought that there was a disconnect in some cases between people who were potentially obvious candidates or customers for swamp products who maybe didn't know about swamp or didn't have a close relationship with them, In some cases, the information flow was a little bit incestuous. It was too much within the swamp program or within the regional board. So we thought that the swamp needed to reach out more to maybe other permit programs, other programs within the state board, maybe even other agencies, and really figure out, given the goals that it was selecting, who was it trying to address? Whose needs was it trying to meet? And again, to kind of balance the relationship or the tension between addressing regional needs and regional audiences and statewide needs and statewide audiences. Again, a lot of this is implicit in the program. We thought that there were sort of budding sort of approaches towards this, but we thought it needed to be made more explicit and more rigorous. The swamp produces a lot of reports. They're all technically very good. We heard earlier that there's a review of the state board's use of science, and the swamp's products are clearly, you know, high-quality science products. On the other hand, the SPARC felt that in terms of painting a picture of conditions at the statewide level or even at the regional level and targeting different kinds of audiences with more synthetic reports that integrated many different kinds of information, that there was an opportunity for the swamp to sort of step into that role and produce a wider variety of reports similar to ones produced, for example, by the Regional Monitoring Program in San Francisco Bay or the Chesapeake Bay Program, and that this was an area of development that the swamp needed to pay attention to. And that in the process of that, the swamp should focus on using its own data and mining data from other sources. There's a need in the state, we thought, for somebody to integrate data from a lot of different sources to paint an assessment picture rather than just use agency by agency information. That's something that the swamp could do. And in order to do that, it needs to have an assessment framework. It needs to have a philosophy for how to ask and answer questions at the statewide level and how to relate those to questions at the regional level. This needs to include very high-level things such as what questions are we asking, what conceptual models are we using to sort of to understand how problems occur and how they might be resolved, and that has to be linked all the way down to a very low level of detail, including monitoring designs and indicator selection and data analysis methods. This was an area that the SPARC was keenly interested in and said that they were willing to come back again at some point in the future and work with the swamp and provide their expertise in helping them develop this strategy and these sorts of monitoring designs and assessment tools. The swamp, if it's going to grow into this assessment role at the statewide level, linked to the regional level, there's an opportunity here for the swamp to use a variety of resources and not just depend on its own in-house expertise. Other programs in other states are wrestling with the very same problems. We felt that the swamp needed the ability to go and work with people in other states, in other agencies who are maybe a little bit ahead of the swamp in terms of assessment tools, monitoring designs, information synthesis, things like that. We thought that the swamp is clearly benefiting from this review and that there, as in most programs that continue to grow and expand, it needs a schedule of external reviews. It needs to make itself vulnerable to outsiders who will look at it very carefully and say, here's where you're on the right track and here's where you need to adjust. We thought that while the program management had done a superb job to date of working within its constraints and being light on its feet and adaptable, that the program management needs to grow and evolve if the program is going to fulfill its statewide responsibilities. And this is I just want to reemphasize, this is not meant to fault the current leadership. Every company that grows, every organization that grows, gets to a point where it needs to be a little more formal about its decision-making. Michael Dell, when he got to a certain point, he brought in people from other companies who had managed bigger companies to help him resolve exactly these kinds of problems. We thought that while the swamp had done a very good job of making decisions in a collaborative way, that it needed more procedures, not to get top-heavy and bureaucratic, but it needed to have systems that, for example, said, what's the process for proposing, evaluating, deciding on, funding, and then implementing pilot projects that might have statewide use? What's the what's the process for sharing information among all the members of the swamp and their target audiences and their partners and clients? Those things are happening in an ad hoc way. We thought that the swamp needed to be a little more formal, again, not excessively formal, but a little more formal about establishing procedures for those sorts of things. And again, to do it in a way that's appropriate to its goals and its assessment strategy. The next steps are, we have a draft review, of which this is a preview. It needs a few little minor edits, and then it will be ready for release whenever you guys see fit. I think that early in January, the draft will be complete. Is that a fair statement? The final report will be available by March. The SPARC is coming back out in March to hear from the SWAMP staff about how they've responded to the recommendations. And then the SPARC will either say, yes, you've done a good job, or, yeah, you've done a good job, but you guys are hedging on this or that recommendation. Given what I've seen so far, and I've participated in several SPARC roundtable discussions and meetings, I think they're going to pass with flying colors in March. That's what I think. There's a set of specific technical reviews which have not been scheduled, but which the SPARC agrees with the SWAMP staff need to happen, and SPARC members have said they're more than willing to participate in these technical reviews. And then they said sometime in the next 2 or 3 years, they should have another full review to see how they're doing with this so far. So that's the total of my remarks, and thanks again on behalf of the other SPARC members for this opportunity to describe our findings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the summary of the recommendations as well as the time that you and other SPARC members participated in this review. From my perspective, I see this as a critical effort at the board in terms of better understanding the water quality concerns out there in California's water bodies and to develop solutions to address those concerns. In particular, I am really impressed and intrigued by some of the recommendations regarding SWAMP's role with respect to other programs like TMDLs, and I would be very interested in the SPARC's report for further details in terms of how SWAMP could be integrated, how SWAMP's authority on monitoring could be better defined and provided for, and also how the issue of mining data and integrating data from other sources, other agencies, could be better utilized within SWAMP. Those are all things of tremendous interest to me. I thank you so much for this summary as well as for your work, and I would say that there should not be any hedging at all in terms of our response to all the SPARC's recommendations.
Well, what I have seen, and I've worked with a lot of organizations who've gotten various kinds of reviews, and to be honest, Fred Holland, who delivered the preliminary findings on at the end of the meeting, was quite blunt. It was a private audience, and so he was quite blunt and brutal. And very, very quickly, the SPARC staff, the roundtable, sort of came back, got themselves together, and started addressing all of the recommendations and the findings and the critiques in an extremely open and productive manner. So, I mean, I think just in terms of the organizational sort of culture and character, they deserve a lot of credit from our perspective. It was sort of way up there at the upper end of what we had all seen.
Just two more questions. Did SPARC participate in the first review? Ms. Connor mentioned that this was the second review of SWAMP.
We did have a SPARC that was conducted in 2002. We didn't actually have a budget for that review, and so we kind of used the technical experts that were within the state. We decided that that really wasn't external enough, and so the membership of the SPARC was completely changed.
Well, I appreciate the notation that SPARC would like to do a review, a reevaluation in 2 years. I think we would welcome that, and I would also encourage you in SPARC's recommendations and report to develop some performance measures for your review in 2 years.
All right.
Let's hold us responsible.
Good. Thanks for the suggestions. I appreciate it.
I would certainly echo what the chair has said. I think this is a critically important program. I must admit I do have a concern about the funding itself, and We'd love to be able to get more funding for it, is what it amounts to. And I do recognize that the state, as always, is a little bit short, but perhaps we can come up with some creative means.
Well, that would be beneficial. And, you know, we heard a lot about that, you know, along with other things. And I think the SPARC members unanimously said, look, you know, we're all part of programs that all need more money. Let's set that aside for the moment and think about what you need to do to establish a clearer identity, a clear set of goals, a clear set of target audiences, and some products. And because you won't get any more money until you start demonstrating your benefit to a set of really important audiences. And so I think the SPARC sort of took a big gulp and they said, yeah, the SWAMP took a big gulp and said, yeah, you're right. And so that's the approach we're taking. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, we have comment cards, and hopefully we'll hear suggestions on funding from some of these speakers as well.
I have no doubt we will hear suggestions.
Let's start with some of our government agency sisters and brothers, starting with Mr. Harold Singer from the Lahontan Regional Water Board.
Good morning. Still is.
Welcome, Mr. Singer.
Good morning. I just have a few comments, and I think the most important thing I want to say is that to the regional boards, SWAMP is a very important program. I've been involved with the regional boards for over 30 years, and really up until 1999, we had little funding to do ambient water quality monitoring. So from our perspective, this was the passage of AB 982 was real important to us. We felt it would provide some policy direction and some funding to support this really important activity. I just want to go back and just refer to the November 2000 State Board report to the legislature that describes the basic charges of 982. And they included, I think, three major things. And I want to point out ahead of time that there is some overlap with these, but there also is some divergent. And they are, the three that I want to point out is determine ambient water quality, develop information about waters which the state presently possesses little or no information, and an approach for assessing and characterizing discharges from non-point sources of pollution and natural background sources. Those are three real important things that do have some overlap, but clearly to establish programs to address all three of them, they're going to have different goals and different criteria. I think from our perspective, you know, they're all important. From carrying out the regional board's mission, I think the last two are more important than the first one, just frankly speaking. But we know that there's a need to do all three or some effort in all three. I think the initial implementation of SWAMP has been more heavily devoted towards the second two. And I think what we're looking at here is maybe some recommendation, and I don't disagree with it, that some funding be put more to the statewide effort, that we need to look at this, look at all three components of this program and try to do what we can with the resources we have to address all three. So from my perspective, I support the recommendations that I've heard here today. This is the first I've been exposed to them, but I think at initial blush, they seem valid. I think they're put in a very constructive way. I think we would be very deficient if we didn't address the recommendations, given the way that they've been put forward. From my perspective, I'm willing to work with the State Board, and I'm willing to devote my staff to work with your staff to develop ways to implement the recommendation. I think the key here is, you know, one of the highlights of the issues is match responsibility with funding. I think that's real important, but the one thing that I think was missing maybe was priorities. You know, what can we do? What's the most important things that we can do with the funding we have? That has to be a policy decision, not a technical decision. And I think you need to ask that be brought before you is what should we be doing with the money we have? I think it's been left to the staff. I think they've done a great job given the lack of direction that they've had over how to address priorities. But I do think that needs to be elevated, and I would hope that you would ask for that. I think that the other highlight is define SWAMP role with relative to other programs. I think that's critical. I think we are doing it at the regional boards, but it's not being coalesced in a way that's understandable to you and to the external stakeholders in California. So I think we need to do a better job of showing how the efforts of SWAMP are supporting some of our other programs. Lastly, I guess I just want to emphasize that some of the work that SWAMP has accomplished to date really is supportive to the regional board's missions. And I just would hope that we would not have that pendulum swing all the way over where we're now putting most of our effort into a statewide type program, that we maintain a balance between regional board needs and statewide overall needs. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Singer. Mr. John Turner from Department of Fish and Game.
Good morning. I'm John Turner, for the record. I'm the Assistant Scientific Branch Chief in the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, which is within the Department of Fish and Game. And hi to Art Baggett, and a good mandolin player.
And a banjo player, too.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning and for you giving us the opportunity to make some comments in support of this very important water program. The Analytical Laboratory Support Services Program, which I supervise, has for years worked for many years in partnership with the Water Board and its staff in conducting numerous statewide water quality programs, including SWAMP. We also have participated fairly regularly in the SWAMP Monitoring Roundtable meetings and become very familiar with SWAMP and its many activities and accomplishments. As you know, water quality monitoring is a fundamental activity necessary to identify water quality conditions and to assure water quality protection. Monitoring is not simply a tool to evaluate accomplishments and successes of various water quality programs, but rather it's also a necessary element for making regulatory decisions and establishing effective implementing policies that guarantee protection of beneficial uses and water quality. These are objectives and applications that not only support the mission of the State Board, but also the Department of Fish and Game, which benefit all citizens in California. We can't do our job without good, clean quantities of water. As a primary partner in conducting these highly visible and long-running and effective programs for over four decades, Department of Fish and Game has provided the Water Board with the capacity to conduct field, laboratory, and other technical and scientific aspects of these monitoring programs. Our long-term collaboration and partnership goes well beyond a contractual relationship, to be sure. We have always considered these many decades-old working partnerships as a mutual team effort. The activities and findings and resulting actions and accomplishments of these many environmental monitoring programs have mutually benefited both our department and the State Water Board. Over the years, many of the environmental problems that have been identified, and more importantly, many cleanups and enhancements of the environment have resulted because of this collaborative long-term partnership. Today, with the exception of the Ag Waiver Program and SWAMP, many of these standalone, long-running, essential monitoring programs have been eliminated. This phenomenon began occurring in fiscal year 03-04 due to lack of funding or because funds were redirected elsewhere to other non-monitoring efforts. A minor remnant of some of these, of some of the work conducted through programs like Muscle Watch and Toxic Substance Monitoring, Contaminated Fish Surveys, and then along with that SWAMP and some of the more modern ones, are continuing under the auspices of SWAMP, but at a funding level that has been drastically reduced and represents at best about 20% of what we had at once available for doing this kind of work. This drastic reduction of funds that were once dedicated to water quality monitoring statewide represents a core of concern for us and the Fish and Wildlife Resources of California, and hence the major reason for our appearance here today in support of the SWAMP program. We are hopeful that SWAMP's primary objectives and provisions will not just be fine-tuned, but will be enhanced through the scientific review process as it proceeds over the next few months. And we are hopeful that SWAMP's many accomplishments to date will be strengthened and increased and enhanced funding rather than continued roller coaster of uncertain funding will take place instead of the roller coaster funding that's occurred over the past number of years. SWAMP was envisioned to do more than simply fulfill statutory obligations. The program was designed to stretch beyond federal and state Clean Water Act requirements and ultimately to enable the coordination of a statewide framework of high-quality, consistent, and scientifically defensible methods and strategies to improve the monitoring, assessment, and reporting of California water quality. SWAMP appears to be well on its way to accomplishing what was originally envisioned. Implementation of scientific planning and review committee's SPARC recommendations should only strengthen the critical this critical program, provided the funding is made available to accomplish all that is proposed. Last and not least, Val Connor and the SWAMP team need to be commended on their efforts on behalf of this program. Through Val's leadership and guidance, we watched the regional boards pull together to turn SWAMP into a comprehensive science-based program that is capable of addressing a multitude of monitoring, assessment, and reporting mandates. And Val is to be congratulated for her steadfast commitment to this program, for not losing focus, for continual vigilance, and in spite of the many obstacles over which she has had no control. So we would like to thank her for all of her efforts. And again, thank you, too, for the opportunity to speak in support of this important program.
Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Thank you.
Mr. Rich Brewer of the Department of Water Resources.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today in front of the board and the public. My name is Rich Brewer. I'm chief of the Department of Water Resources Environmental Monitoring Program, and also I'm one of the program managers for the Interagency Ecological Program, which is mandated to study the health of the estuary and its response to various water projects. One thing that's been very clear to us in our recent investigation of the pelagic fish decline, which has both state and federal interest, is the fact that there's not been a strong link to the contaminants investigations of the potential impact to the biota and the delta. And in that area, I would like to strongly urge support for SWAMP to continue to provide that vital connection of assessment of loading and the assessment of toxicity of potential contaminants to our tributaries and to the delta. On our side, we will continue to expand our connectivity with the SWAMP program by dedicating staff to link our studies in terms of the estuary and its biota with that vital information provided by both water quality monitoring and toxicity. Through my 20 years of experience of water quality monitoring in the tributaries of the Delta, I had the opportunity to work with Val Connor and other members that are now involved with SWAMP and have nothing but the ultimate respect for them. Just want to make sure the board provides the support and understanding that we'll be there as one of those partners to link up and describe the vital information we need to protect the health of the estuary. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Sam Harder from the California Bay Delta Program. I apologize for mangling your last name.
You were pretty close. Sam Harder with the California Bay Delta Authority. I'm a staff member in the Water Quality Program, and I also want to get on board the complimentary train for Val and the SWAMP Program. We also know a little bit about mid-course correction and review lately, so we understand what SWAMP is going through. But as you know, the State Board is one of the implementing agencies for the CalFed Bay Delta Program, and I think one of the more important implementing agencies. Water quality protection and improvement is one of the key goals of the program, and will become more important as the program moves forward. We're very supportive of the goals of the SWAMP program and have been working with them to bring consistency, and the SWAMP has been working to bring consistency and reliability to the many monitoring programs that they coordinate. One of the principles of the CalFed program is that decisions will be based on the best science possible, and scientific peer review is one of the primary tools for making that happen. We commend the SWAMP program for taking this step to, you know, allow people to come in and look at their program and go through that review process. It's not always easy. And we think it was absolutely the right thing to do, and we think it'll be the right thing to do in the future. Think the state board should continue to take a lead in making sure that reliable water quality information is available when it's needed, and continue to support the SWAMP program and help them to fulfill their mission. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Maria Ray from US EPA.
Thank you, Chairman Dodek and members of the board. My name is Maria Ray with EPA in San Francisco. We're here today to support Del Conner and the SWAMP program, the work that's been done. We congratulate the state board in creating the SPARC review, and especially in finding such high-caliber scientists and bringing those folks in from out of state and really getting a good cross-section of the best scientific thinking in the country to add to the program. To validate some of Mr. Singer's points, I think at a national level, we have not seen emphasis on the monitoring program in the 33-year history of the Clean Water Act. So unlike perhaps some of our other programs, like the AIR program that integrated monitoring from the start into the design of the program, in the Clean Water Act programs, although it was integrated in the design of the program, was never funded or emphasized. And so that we really see a sea change at a national level in the last 3 to 4 years. As an agency, we're supporting this type of statewide monitoring program. We issue guidance requiring states to develop a statewide monitoring program with 10 elements. The SWAMP program meets that guidance. We also have a whole emphasis on data exchange and data management through our National Environmental Information Exchange Networks. California has received a $1.5 million grant that's gone through DWR, but I think also is well integrated into the SWAMP program to emphasize the whole need to just have data exchange. And I think it goes to one of your points of just how do we make sure that we're mining data from all these other agencies. What we need is to fully fund that sort of data exchange system. When we accepted the SWAMP program and wrote a letter back to you last summer, we emphasized, in addition to data exchange, two other areas that we'd like to see continued emphasis on. One is an integrated state design element with integrating the state design needs with the regional board priorities. And I think it's consistent with what you heard from the SPARC review committee, that we do see there's been a tremendous entrepreneurial nature in the regional board design, and that's well taken given the size of the state and given the need to make sure that the analyses are used at a regional level. However, we do want to see the state priorities elevated to some degree and a clearer message on what the state interest is, perhaps TMDL, some of the other things that you have mentioned. So we're interested in engaging with you in that conversation once the SPARC review is finalized. The second aspect that we've really emphasized and will continue to emphasize is quality assurance, quality control. And again, we congratulate Ms. Conner and her staff on setting forward some good procedures on QAQC. I think the challenge is now for those concepts to be adopted by all data development programs that the state board administers through the regional boards and perhaps by other state agencies. I think EPA and the state board are natural leaders in this area. A lot of other departments don't have quite as much emphasis on QAQC. The challenge is funding, of course, and we realize that we, given existing resources, don't have the capability to review all the quality assurance, quality control plans that now are out there. But we do want to see that continue to be given attention, and we think it's extremely important, and you're certainly moving in the right direction. The last point I would emphasize is just that we at EPA have had tremendous success in working in the regional context through San Francisco Estuary Institute and the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project. And we think that those two regional entities, which include EPA and the regional boards, are good models in and of themselves to look at how can you
establish an ongoing research and monitoring project and have the support that you need and have the information be relevant on a regional level. So we're interested in, I'm not suggesting that those two models could be replicated throughout the state without a lot of additional work, but we are interested in taking those concepts and looking at could they be used regionally elsewhere. And just for your information, our staff is working in the Central Valley looking at the ecological, the EIP program, and looking at that, could that be expanded and have a little bit more of those aspects of regional monitoring integrated into the SWAMP program. We see those as really working together. And similarly, we're working in the Klamath Basin on sort of a fledgling effort up there. So that's just to give you some information from our perspective, both on the importance of the program and what we're doing to work with you. And again, we're very supportive of the program, of the SPARC review, and wish to work with you in whatever way you think would be beneficial to continue the program. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Linda Sheehan?
Good afternoon, Chair Doduck and board members. My name is Linda Sheehan. I'm the director of the California Coastkeeper Alliance, which represents waterkeepers from the Oregon border down to San Diego. And I wanted to reiterate the thanks for holding this hearing today on the review of the SPARC, and also for supporting the SPARC review, which is something that the AB 982 Public Advisory Group called for 5 years ago. I was actually co-chair. I think I was out of the room when I was voted this, but I was co-chair of the committee, the PAG committee, that wrote the monitoring recommendations to the State Water Board. And this was a joint report by the members of the environmental community 5 years ago and the regulated community. And some of the, just to show you, some of the folks that were on the regulated community at the time were BIA, Cattlemen's Association, CASA, WISPA, the Navy. And we, you know, usually don't agree that the sun is shining, but we agreed on these recommendations, and we agreed that SWAMP is extremely important. And some of the things that we did agree on in particular were the development of need-based monitoring plans, not monitoring plans that are driven year by year by budget fluctuations. We agreed that we need complete spatial coverage of each region at least once every 5 years. We agreed on strong need to integrate data from other agencies, not only to leverage the utility of that data, but to also build partnerships with other agencies that we could use to implement some of the concerns or problems or issues that were found through the monitoring process. We also agreed that we needed to maximize the state's ability through monitoring to assess the success of its water quality programs and turn them in the directions that they need to go. And again, we also agreed that we needed the science panel review that you have today. And I would commend you for having the workshop today in December, right before the legislature is all rested and ready to go in January, and doing good things to support monitoring in many, many ways. But I wanted to just...
It never occurred to me.
No. It occurred to me, and so that's why I was raising it. So thank you. And thank you very much again. I did want to address some of the questions that you had with respect to funding. And one of the things I did want to highlight, I have been up here is probably for almost a year now talking about funding for SWAMP and several venues, Section 106, et cetera. And I don't want to reiterate all of those points, but the general point is that, you know, funding for ambient monitoring was at the $12 million level in the 1980s, and it's been decreasing since then, and the funds that are available have been decreasing steadily over the last 5 years, despite all of the consensus and commendations that you hear today for monitoring. One of the things that I'm sure you're familiar with is a bill by Senator Kehoe, SB 1070, which would put monitoring at the top of agencies' priority list. And that's really the key problem, is monitoring has not been really at the top of agencies' priorities list, where it should be. And I would want to remind, perhaps this is something you didn't know, but the bill calls for a Water Quality Monitoring Council, which is something that Texas, for example, put into place back in 1996. I think, I hate to say that George Bush was probably governor back then, but maybe that was one good thing that he did. Someone public testimony saying that, but that's an
actually, just to protect yourself, it's a strong lieutenant governor system in Texas.
Thank you.
It's sort of reversed from here. The governor is more a figurehead. It's a lieutenant governor that does most of the stuff.
Thank you very much.
I want to reassure you.
Yeah, I stand corrected for the record. Thank you very much. But this is something California should have done years ago. We hear from the agencies who are here today, there's a strong desire to do this, and with just a little bit of push, I think that we could have a really amazing integrated program, which is something that all of the regulated community and the environmental community believes needs to be done. And the science and decision-making report that you heard about today certainly calls on that. And I know at least a number of water bodies in particular that were not listed as impaired, even though they were clearly impaired because of surrounding uses, because of no monitoring data. And with just a little bit of more monitoring, we can get a better handle on what's going on in our state waters. With respect to money, I think probably the one thing that I would want to emphasize, there are a number of sources out there, but the one thing I want to emphasize is asking for the same $6.8 million every year, the flatline budget, you know, whether or not that's something that the governor supports or, you know, finance isn't allowing you to ask for more, I don't know. The legislature would certainly support more, I'm sure. The regulated community and I co-signed letters several years in a row asking for at least $10 million on top of that. But if you ask for the same amount every year, it really limits the ability of the state water board to be able to capture additional funding that might come in throughout the year. For example, waste discharge permit fund surpluses, which have been occurring at about the $3 million level since about 2003. And we weren't able to capture that this year, apparently, because it was a flatline budget. But if we ask for more, then perhaps we can increase fees as appropriate on the permitted dischargers, scaring me, and also actually assess fees on non-point pollution dischargers, on the waivers, which is not being done right now. It could be an important source, but we need to ask for the money in order to get the money. And so I would strongly urge the board to be able to do that. Am I out of time?
Yes, you are.
Okay, great. I've submitted comments in this regard, and I do strongly support the recommendations of the SPARC and ask for further communications in this regard.
Thank you.
Linda, also, I just wanted to say that, going back to a previous item, that I appreciated the fact that your organization, a number of other statewide organizations, environmental groups, all weighed in on the Los Osos situation. I appreciated the fact that you saw the statewide significance there and the strongly worded letter. So I just wanted to thank you and the coalition for the involvement.
No, thank you. It's important.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Mark Gold. Excuse me, I'm told it's Dr. Mark Gold.
I didn't say that. I'm not that way. Unless necessary.
Yeah, right.
on the advice of my vice chair.
Mark, you worked hard for that. We'll call you doctor.
You don't know that. Come on, you're a Bruin. Come on, just. Anyways, I'm the executive director of Heal the Bay, and I'm mostly here to support Linda's comments. Heal the Bay was also a PAG member, and I thought her summary was absolutely excellent in that regard. I've worked with Brock Bernstein for 15 years and Steve Weisberg for probably over a decade, so I'm not surprised that there's a lot of very good, strong recommendations that appear to be coming out of the SPARC. I can only hope that the recommendations are going to be a lot more specific than we saw today, and I'm sure they will be, with specific time frames for implementation on how fast I'd like to see things get implemented to make the program work well. I think we've all seen through going through water quality assessment issues and 303D list issues really how critical this program absolutely is. It's not the only reason why the swamp's here, and I think you've heard that from a number of speakers ahead of time, but clearly since you're going through these issues right now at the same time, you see what happens when you have inadequate data in a lot of areas, and then these major regulatory decisions have to be made by you. It makes you realize how important that the swamp truly is from the standpoint of you're seeing individual TMDLs, for example, get passed with huge monitoring requirements and individual studies requirements that perhaps if the swamp funded at the $25 million plus a year level, which is probably the bare minimum that really needs to function a lot more effectively than it is today, we wouldn't end up having a lot of these sorts of discussions and debates and the like on each one of these individual issues. Obviously, the program that we have right now, we're not able to answer big picture questions on the state of our waters on a region by region basis. There's been some effective work, but certainly not in being able to talk about the whole state of California or all of a whole area, Central California, Southern California, Northern California. with that regard. And then the need for integration of this information just really cannot be underestimated. And so that's something that's absolutely critical that hopefully will come out of those recommendations. I know they obviously are a strong, strong recommendation within there. There's also whole categories of receiving water monitoring that really aren't being addressed very well statewide, things like bioassessment, which I know Fish and Game has really been trying to do a heck of a lot, but that's not necessarily integrated into the way the State Water Resources Control Board and the regional boards look at issues. Toxicity is a major issue that, of course, you're going to be addressing in the next couple of months in regards to the SIP. Other narrative standards, approaches, algae, nutrients, those sorts of things, where really the swamp may be the best tool to really get a good handle on how to on really the state of our receiving waters and what really needs to be done to clean them up. Fish contamination is another issue. We've seen fish contamination programs actually get cut back and even eliminated at the state level because of lack of funding, and that's a very, very critical part of swamp, or should be, that just isn't really occurring the way it needs to. And there we're talking about public health risks that are being, where the public is being put at risk of cancer risk and the like, and that's obviously objectionable to all of us. So obviously the conclusion that I'm sure you hear from everybody is the need for this dedicated funding. You heard from Linda a number of suggestions to potentially deal with that, permit fees and the like, modifying of existing permit programs. A lot of times you can do this. I've seen it done at our local region, Region 4, on sort of a permit-by-permit basis, a modification of those permits to sort of help for more regional monitoring of Santa Monica Bay. That's going on right now. So overall, you still have your compliance monitoring, but a small portion of your compliance monitoring program now goes towards a regional monitoring effort. And so that's the sort of thing that also could be looked at as another creative way to generate funding for this highly needed program. There's just too much at stake, too many regulatory decisions are being made on a regular basis to not have a strong swamp program, which is where we are right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dave Paradis from the Bay Foundation.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Dodd, board members. I am Dave Paradis with the Bay Foundation. Like Linda Sheehan, I served on the AB 982 Public Advisory Group, and so I've watched the program from its very inception. I've also spent quite a few thousand hours working volunteer hours, actually one-on-one, with folks involved in the swamp program. I've watched it evolve from a group of disparate regions being pulled together into something that is consistent statewide. Been a great deal of benefit from the interactions between the regions, and the regional components of this program have made real differences within the regions in terms of informing other programs such as the Irrigated Ag Waiver Program and the like. Like everyone else that's probably going to come to the podium, the budget situation is really terrible. If you really plot the line over time, the budget's been declining since day one. It was initiated at a level that was insufficient, like Dr. Gold. Something in the neighborhood of $25 million appears to be the absolute bare-bones minimum to actually accomplish the task at hand. An awful lot of progress has been made in the quality assurance area and the area of standardizing this information on a statewide basis so that people can actually have access to the data. The ups and downs of the program have made it really difficult to accomplish some of the things that the scientific peer review identified. In all fairness to the program, it just didn't have the resources to do some of the things that it probably does need to do in the future. But it won't be able to do it without some stable funding. Again, I think it's a very important program. It really serves many of the other programs in the state as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chris Coburn of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary.
Good afternoon, Chair, board members. I would echo many of the comments that were just made by Linda and Dr. Gold and Dave. I think they've been at this at a longer time than I have and definitely had some good insight. And I would also echo some of the comments that the Spark Review has made with respect to identifying data clients and also the uses for the swamp data, as I think we can show a real benefit for the swamp program that will in turn bring about additional funding sources. And I would also encourage looking around the state at some of the more successful monitoring programs that we've seen. A lot of those programs are funded in innovative ways. Some in the San Francisco Bay. We have a program in Monterey Bay that is funded through the dischargers. And some of those programs are really providing some useful data to us as data users. I would, of course, like to issue my support for SWAMP. I think that the program or the work that they have been doing, that Val has been doing, both for providing us information to help us with management decisions has been critical. Also, their support of citizen monitoring has been very critical in the Monterey Bay area. I also would like to support our regional programs at the same time on the Central Coast. The CCAMP region has been, or the CCAMP program has been very effective, in part for a lot of Dave's volunteer hours that he just mentioned. I do want to comment. I want to change track just a little bit on SWAMP and mention one aspect that I'm not sure many will bring up today, but that's the use of practice effectiveness data from agricultural projects that are being funded by the State Water Resources Control Board. For grant funds that are administered by the board, there are requirements for 50-foot reporting requirements, and this practice effectiveness data is being required to be SWAMP compatible. And I just want to issue a comment that we're really looking at an inappropriate use of that data and putting that into SWAMP. SWAMP is intended for the use of ambient monitoring data, not for practice effectiveness data. And that requirement that is being put into the contract language is compromising the data that SWAMP has, and that it could potentially skew the data. In fact, in one comment from a UC Cooperative Extension researcher, his comment was that he fears 100% misinterpretation of the data from practice effectiveness monitoring should it be put into SWAMP. Another issue is that these requirements are jeopardizing programs, including on the Central Coast. Right now, if those contract requirements are not changed, we're going to stand to lose about $3 million on the Central Coast for grant money. And that is going to jeopardize programs for agricultural implementation, and that is a concern to us at the sanctuary. So, again, I would like to reiterate our support for the SWAMP program. I'd like to, again, mention our concern over the use of the data and the requirements that we are seeing through the contract languages in the Prop 40 and Prop 50 grant contracts. I'm going to leave with you a document that we prepared on the Central Coast that highlights some of the ag implementation success that we have, and again reiterate that this success is jeopardized by the contract language that we're seeing in those grants. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. G. Fred Lee.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm here to provide an independent assessment of SWAMP from the point of view of someone who's been involved in developing water quality monitoring programs in the U.S. and other countries over the past 40 years, and as someone who's involved now in utilizing SWAMP data in the Central Valley. And I've had an opportunity to review some of this data, and we'll talk about some of the issues that I think need to be addressed. As we have heard, California has lagged badly with respect to water quality monitoring. I grew up in California and went east to go to graduate school and spent 30 years teaching in several states in the east. We were doing things in Wisconsin in the 60s that SWAMP is starting to do now. So there are many areas of the country that are well ahead of California with respect to monitoring the ambient water quality. When I got back here in 89, I saw a situation where basically California was looking to, is it wet? Not what is its quality. Is it water? And how can I divert it? That's been the theme here for many, many years. SWAMP is beginning to turn this around so that we're starting to see, you know, what is the quality of water and how does our management of water in the state affect quality? there are some good examples of monitoring programs. San Francisco Bay, Sacramento River, Val Connor was instrumental when she was with the regional board in helping to develop the Sacramento River. But if you look at the Delta, if you look at the San Joaquin River, you'll see that we have very poor data on water quality in these water bodies, both of which are extremely important to the state. SWAMP is beginning to fill these information gaps, but it's still a long ways away from providing all the data needed to cover water quality and all of the water quality issues that need to be addressed. These are the list of five items that the SWAMP report covers. I agree with these. They're all important. I want to talk about how this can be expanded a little bit to address some issues of importance. You've heard about the 7% of what is needed. I totally support this issue that we have to greatly expand SWAMP funding if we're going to accomplish what is needed with respect to support of the state board and regional boards' water quality management programs. Basically, we have to find a way so that all of those who benefit from water resource management and availability in the state fund water quality. We have to have it. The monitoring has to be part of this. There are a couple aspects of data management and program that need to be expanded. One of those is an outgrowth of my work on the San Joaquin River swamp data, where I started to look, and as part of a review that I'm writing, just what is the data available on nutrients in the San Joaquin River? And right away I found that the data is not usable. And so I started asking myself, well, what needs to be done? And what I'm recommending is to get an independent review of the usability of swamp data. There's often a real disconnect between those who develop water quality monitoring programs and those who have to use data in water quality management programs. Now, I happen to work across both areas and frequently run into this problem of you can't use the data because the program for monitoring was not set up adequately. This needs to be reviewed as part of any monitoring program outside of the program. It really is essential because it has to be done by somebody who understands data use in a management arena. I also strongly support this independent outside review that SWAMP has conducted. That's essential to making this program effective. One of the problems we have here in state is this restriction on the staff travel. It's unbelievable that the staff in California can't go out of the state to attend meetings to learn about what's happening in other areas. It clearly reflects on the ability of the staff to become aware of what's happening elsewhere. There's a lot of good information in other areas that needs to be brought into programs here, and that could be if the staff could get out to these meetings. There is need to expand the aquatic life toxicity testing. It's not only the testing we're doing that says is it toxic or not, but to measure the magnitude of toxicity and the potential cause, such as the pyrethroid and organophosphorus pesticides. We provide guidance on how to do that. This is the one of greatest concern to us, need to expand the scope of the pollutants measured. Currently, we focus on a few priority pollutants and a few other traditional constituents, such as heavy metals and organics. The current approach may measure up to about 100 chemicals. There are many thousands of chemicals being discharged to water bodies from municipal, industrial, and agricultural sources. Most are unregulated, unmonitored, and many have the potential to be adverse to water quality.
Doctor, we do have your written submission in our record, and your time has run out, so I do need to ask you to stop.
All right, one last. This is Dr. Dalton's plot of what we're measuring. We're measuring in swamp. Purple.
Yes,
we
it is.
All the rest to address.
Yes, and it is.
It is in what you
provided us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two remaining speakers, Tacy Curry of the California Association of Resource Conservation District, and then Ms. Carrie McNeil of Delta Keeper.
Good afternoon. My name is Tacy Curry. I'm with California Association of Resource Conservation Districts. I agree with a lot of my all of the representatives prior to me in supporting the SWAMP program, and we are working to, as we appreciate this tool, we are also working to contribute data to the program. I am here today to also address a concern regarding the Prop 50 funds and the Division of Financial Assistance requesting all testing data be submitted in the SWAMP format to allow effective project effectiveness compilation. Currently, SWAMP is not meant to accept this type of data and could completely skew the database if there is not division between the ambient monitoring and project practice monitoring, as well as linkages specifically to experimental design and a coding system for the end user to interpret the data. We think that this could skew the data to a point where it would be unrecognizable. It would not be the effective tool that we are hoping and working with currently. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much.
Can I comment on that?
Actually, no.
Okay.
This concern has been raised by many interested parties and as part of another effort which is undergoing in other parts of the board. So I don't want to get into a detailed discussion of this particular issue today. Thank you. Ms. McNeil?
Hello, Madam Chair. Thank you for this opportunity to make comments. On behalf of Delta Keeper, a chapter of Bay Keeper, we wanted to both support the recommendations made here as well as the comments made by Ms. Sheehan earlier. And I just wanted to emphasize two points. The first is about integrating the data. And I just can't emphasize enough what a great policy tool that would be, the economic benefits of this, as well as the scientific and the Delta alone. We've heard from several of these speakers how many studies are going on. And while we're looking at listing of the impaired waters, the TMDLs, the ag waiver issues, if we had that data available in a centralized public fashion, that would just make this policy decision so much more thoughtful and better. The one comment I would make is just to ensure that with that, the data is, there's some sort of standard created for how data is collected and reported so that I think, as Dr. Lee mentioned a moment ago, that data is useful. And so for thoughtful analysis and policy recommendations. The second point is about funding, which we absolutely support a high level of funding for this program. It's so needed. And I would like to reassert the position stated by Ms. Sheehan that right now this is funded by the fees put on those with the permits, but in our area where pesticides are such a huge issue, the folks with the waivers, that irrigated agriculture is not paying for that monitoring, and as the dischargers of those pollutants, we feel that that would be very important to consider adding a fee onto that waiver. So that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any comments? All right. With that, I again thank everyone, especially Dr. Bernstein, for presenting us with the information today, as well as comments from the various speakers. I look forward to getting more specifics, more details from the SPARCS recommendation, and also recommendations from the staff, responses from the staff with milestones in terms of implementing and responding to the SPARCS recommendation. I noticed in one of the presentation that this will be brought back to the board in April. I would prefer, actually, I would like for it to bring back to the board before the report and the staff's response to that report is finalized. Particularly, I'm interested in getting the staff responses, milestones for implementation, and to the extent possible, expedite those implementation, recognizing other constraints in order to make this a fully robust monitoring effort, or as robust as we can possibly make it. And so let's schedule a report back to the board on the SPARC recommendations and implementation of the SPARC recommendations before all of those issues are finalized in the report. Well, thank you very much. With that, it's been a very long morning, and the biggest part of it is still to come. So we're going to take a short break and reconvene at 12:45, and we will hear the remaining item then. Thank you.
have a point to that, but it seems like I need to work with you and Steve as part of the funding process. It seems very clear.
I cut my. Well, Well, it's a shame.
I know you were.
While everyone is munching, we're going to go ahead and resume. This is a workshop item. We just would like to hear from the staff on the status of this effort, especially after the scoping sessions that were conducted earlier this year, during which three board members participated in those meetings. So with that, Mr. Giannopoulos.
Madam Chair, I'm going to try to go through these slides fairly quickly. You participated in two public meetings on the CEQA process. Mr. Savetti participated in two. We have a lot of slides. I'm going to go through them fast. We know that septic tanks are located throughout California as well as domestic wells. Our estimate of 1.2 million septic tanks in the system are based on 1990 census as well as 600,000 wells. This is a typical conventional on-site system, different from the presentation that I gave before the LA Regional Board. We included, at Mr. Savendi's request, a cost for these systems, and the cost, of course, ranges throughout the state, but $5,000 to $15,000 is probably a fairly good estimate. This is an actual plume that has been well studied. The information on this slide comes from the US EPA manual. It shows that the unsaturated zone is necessary for pathogen reduction, which can take up to 20 days, and I'll be talking a little bit about depth to groundwater or an impervious layer. However, as you know, there are materials, constituents that make it through the unsaturated zone, soluble constituents that are resistant to degradation. In a water table environment, an alluvial environment, they form this material forms plumes. This is not any different than an underground storage tank leak or discharges to land. And these plumes can travel hundreds of feet and exceed water quality objectives. The state-of-the-art system that we consider would have a septic tank with an effluent filter. It would have supplemental treatment that reliably reduces BOD suspended solids and total nitrogen with a shallow dispersal system, and I emphasize shallow dispersal system. These systems would require a maintenance contract, ideally with telemetry monitoring, and the cost for these systems would be, we estimate, $25,000 to $40,000. We've been at this for 5 years. Everybody knows that. We're at today's workshop on December 9th. Our regulations that were the subject of the scoping meetings included performance standards. More specifically, the item of interest was the minimum depth to groundwater. They include monitoring of septic tanks and groundwater monitoring at point of sale. There were specific provisions for impaired surface waters, and provided that version in June 2005 provided for a memorandum of understanding with local agencies to implement the regulations. At the five public meetings, these are fairly high-level comments, but we identified comments that indicated that the design standards were too restrictive, and that they could make lots unbuildable, that monitoring at point of sale was not appropriate, that monitoring of domestic wells was not appropriate, that the requirements for impaired surface water bodies were too restrictive, and the cost for implementation by local agencies were too high. I'm going to talk about each of those major comments and provide recommendations or options, alternatives, and recommendations. First, starting off with design standards, we agree that the 5-foot minimum requirement would make lots unbuildable and would require expensive supplemental treatment. Literature does support lower depths for effective pathogen reduction. All we're talking about here is pathogen reduction. Supplemental treatment further reduces bacterial populations, to a lesser extent viral populations. Most county ordinances and regional board requirements include minimum depths to groundwater or an impervious layer in the 3 to 5 foot range. So, options that we would propose that you consider include a no statewide minimum depth to groundwater, and you will see in red a CCDEH. That's our understanding of the recommendation of CCDEH's version. That version is posted on our website as well as this PowerPoint presentation, and I'm sure they will speak to all of these issues, but that is our understanding. A second option would be keep the existing 5-foot minimum. We recommend, and that's what the DWQ number one is, we recommend a range, as opposed to a specific number, a range of 3 to 5 feet for conventional systems and a range of 2 to 3 feet for systems with supplemental treatment. You will see a DWQ two next to the fourth option. The Central Valley Regional Board has been working within the range of 2 to 5 feet to identify specific criteria. And we support that effort. That is a work in progress. Mr. Pedry will discuss that after I am finished. Monitoring requirements. I went over the specific comments first relating to septic tank inspections. The US EPA manual recommends that septic tanks be pumped every 3 to 5 years unless they're inspected for solids. We estimate that the costs for inspection are between $50 and $100. The options are no statewide septic tank requirements for septic tank inspections. That's a CCDEH recommendation. We could keep the septic tank inspections at sale of property. We would recommend that all septic tanks in the state be inspected every 5 years, and that would be the owner's responsibility. For groundwater monitoring, the draft regulations require groundwater monitoring because discharges from these systems do form plumes in fractured rock condition. Of course, they do not form plumes, and the situation is probably a lot worse. We recommended as in order to conduct groundwater monitoring appropriately, you have to identify the direction of flow. You have to identify the plume. This is classically done for underground storage tank sites. You need three wells to determine the direction of flow and another well to establish something in the discharge, a point of monitoring the discharge. The cost for doing that ranges from $6,000 to $18,000. Which is, and of course it doesn't work in a fractured rock environment. We recommended monitoring of the domestic well as an alternative to groundwater monitoring because you would not have to go to the expense of providing monitoring wells at a great cost, and that information, although not of the discharge itself, would be much less expensive, and it would provide useful information to the homeowner as well as information for the water boards in terms of water quality in the vicinity of discharges. I would note that both the US EPA and the Centers for Disease Control recommend monitoring domestic private wells once a year. As you know, we did voluntary well testing in three counties, El Dorado, Yuba, and Tehama. We are now in Tulare County. The information that we provided at the scoping meetings identified a significant percentage of these wells had constituents that shouldn't be there. 24% in El Dorado County had total coliform. This demonstrates that these wells are vulnerable. The point of that monitoring was not to try to identify the source of the contamination. Options for groundwater monitoring there include no requirements for statewide groundwater monitoring, to require monitoring at point of sale, or to require monitoring at new wells, at new installations of wells, or all on-site systems every 3 to 5 years. That is our recommendation. You see a range of every 3 to 5 years. We think that monitoring should be more frequent than every 5 years. On the other hand, we recognize that imposing a requirement for inspecting septic tanks every 5 years, it would make it convenient to have monitoring the domestic well or groundwater monitoring on the same schedule. For impaired surface water bodies, we would recommend keeping the requirements that are identified in the regulations. There is a recommendation by CCDEH to go forward with regional board identification of local programs. They might talk more about that option. We would recommend keeping the requirements in the proposed regs as they are. Costs to local agencies are too high. We included extensive reporting requirements in the in any memorandum of understanding, and we recognize that all local agencies have detailed local ordinances. Options. We could retain the existing memorandum of understanding requirements, detailed reporting requirements as contained in the June draft. The CCDH recommends minimizing MOU requirements. We would actually recommend that local agencies be authorized to implement the regulations upon request to the State Water Board without an MOU or its reporting requirements, as long as local agencies agree to implement any adopted regulations as well as basin plan requirements.
And how would that authorization be made?
It would, in the case of regional boards, the original proposal was that each local agency enter into MOUs with regional boards, and it presumably it could go before the board at a meeting, or the board could authorize the executive director to enter into these memoranda. The same would apply to the state board, although it would be a simpler process if the local agency was authorized to apply to the state water board to implement these regulations and agreed, then we would grant them implementation. I would note that most of the provisions and the requirements are responsibilities of owners of on-site systems, not local agencies. Basically, what we view this authorization as doing as recognizing that they have an important role in the permitting and regulation of these on-site systems, which is slightly different than the role that we have as the water boards, unless they choose to assume that entire role. Implementation. We always propose that implementation of these regs, proposed regs, would be through waivers issued by regional water quality control boards. These are discharges of waste. Regional boards can either issue individual waste discharge requirements, waive requirements. We are these on-site systems do affect waters of the state, do impair water quality. They do pose a significant threat to water quality locally and can do so cumulatively. Therefore, the options that are in front of us are that regional boards issue individual waste discharge requirements to on-site systems. That is a terrible idea. That each regional board would adopt a conditional waiver for on-site systems consistent with any regulations adopted by this board, or that the state board, and this is our recommendation, that the state board adopt a statewide conditional waiver for on-site systems, along with adoption of regulations.
Why isn't a general statewide WDR an option?
It could be. I'm joined by Todd Thompson, the program manager, and Marley Wood, our counsel. We had not discussed the possibility of adopting a statewide WDR, but. Are there any comments? Otherwise, I'd
proceed. My name is Todd Thompson. I'm staff at the EWQ. I think we hadn't considered a general WDR as an option because of the difficulty in implementation with all the numbers of discharges that we're talking about. But that's why we hadn't considered it. It's not that it's not a possibility.
Thank you. Thanks, Todd. Summary of our recommendations for design standards. Again, we're recommending a range of 3 to 5 feet for conventional systems and a range of 2 to 3 feet for supplemental treatment, although we certainly would consider a more detailed criteria within that range if that can be developed. For monitoring, we're recommending that septic tanks be monitored. These are homeowner requirements, that septic tanks be inspected for solids levels every 5 years, that groundwater or domestic wells be monitored at on-site system installations every 3 to 5 years. For cost considerations, we recommend that the water board, the state water board, authorize local agencies to implement regulations upon request, so long as they agree to implement the regulations and basin plan requirements. The law allows for basin plan requirements or local requirements to be more restrictive of any regulations adopted by the board. And finally, we recommend that the board would adopt regulations and a statewide waiver waste discharge requirements. Mr. Katz.
Yes, just one question, and my apologies if you covered this before I got here. When you talk about tank inspection, having learned from underground storage tanks, are we now considering in that connections, fittings, as opposed to just the tank?
We are talking about identifying the level of solids in the septic tank to determine whether or not they should be pumped. That's the inspection.
That's all. That's all we're.
That's
okay.
Really what. That's all really right. What we're talking
Thanks.
About.
Thanks.
Timeline for adoption of regulations. This is the timeline that we would propose. We would take the time until March to draft revisions to the regs, a statement of reasons, an environmental impact report, a draft. These are all draft, and a conditional waiver. And we would notice these in April with another hearing, state board hearing, that during the period June to August, we would basically respond to comments, renotice revisions, and final adoption in October of regulations, the final EIR, and the conditional waiver statewide. That's it.
So this isn't a hearing?
Nope.
All we're doing is just listen to the, so we can direct, this is a workshop, but it says information. Okay, so we can make comments today.
We have two requests to present after Mr. Giannopoulos. One is from Mr. Jim Pedri of the Central Valley Water Board, and the other one is from CCDH. So let's hear from Mr. Pedri first.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Jim Pedri, Assistant Executive Officer with the Central Valley Water Board. I run the Reading office. And today we're going to just indicate our comments on the workshop today from a regional board perspective. It's also a perspective with about 50 years from the two presenters today of practical experience regulating, working with counties on on-site systems. In fact, I once served on CCDH Model Ordinance Committee in the early 90s that produced a model ordinance that was part of this process. It was rejected as far as being a consensus document. I'm going to rush through my presentation today because in the interest of time, feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions on any of the slides. I'll breeze through them. Basically, there's 1.2 million systems statewide. I don't think a lot of people realize that each system discharges about 110,000 gallons of sewage to a lot per year. It's about the equivalent of 655-gallon drums per day. These systems all rely on the soil mantle to protect groundwater and to prevent wastewater from surfacing. If the soil is clogged or is high groundwater, it'll surface and run into the creeks. The proper sitings, of course, soil and groundwater evaluation, in the regional board's opinion, is critical. There's also limited science regarding soil pathogen removal, so when you get into areas of shallower soils, supplemental systems, you may not be considering 100% virus removal. And lastly, there's documented water quality and potential health problems. I think you dealt with the Los Osos issue today. And that's a clear indication that on-site systems, we have to assume that when they're installed forever. There may not be a solution to actually sewer these areas in the foreseeable future.
Mr. Pedri, I'm going to ask you to skip through some of the background information
okay. And
get to whatever specific recommendations that you would like to make.
Yeah, basically, on this slide, we're just saying right now in California, there's 58 varying standards for on-site systems. There is no single regional board standard as well, the varying basin plans as well. Real briefly, I'll go through these slides, and I was going to ask Ron Dykstra, who's been my primary researcher in the Reading office, to go through some of the research on this, but basically this, a summary is we need prudent safety factors. The matrix I'll go into in a little while really presents two methodologies of approaching this, one from a safety factor standpoint. The other with supplemental system is eliminating safety factors but requiring more monitoring. The main thing to note on this slide is that virus removal is not really well understood. There's been a real deficiency in valid virus removal to show that 2 feet of soil, for example, is really all you need. Regarding nitrogen, again, soil removal is very minimal. Supplemental system performance in nitrogen and the ones we've regulated is very variable. Nitrogen is very difficult to remove from the effluent, and we feel that density restrictions are the best macro-level control of nitrogen. Good example, Chico urban area, great deep soils, no pathogen issues to groundwater, but because of the density and the fact that these deep soils allow very dense development, we have a tremendous nitrate issue. It's one of these list funding that's coming before you soon for a huge loan to solve these problems. Finally, supplemental system performance. We believe that the aerobic treatment units have a high degree of variability. A study in West Virginia that we recently received documented that 92% were in noncompliance with the standards that were issued for those supplemental systems.
with a single pass sand filter. Again, the results are variable. Disinfection is probably even more problematic. It's hard to expect an individual homeowner to maintain a chlorination system to the same level of magnitude required of a POTW, because the impact is if the disinfection doesn't work, groundwater is going to get contaminated. Here's just a brief example of groundwater level variability. This was taken in one of the counties out of the Reading office. It shows that there is a real need to monitor groundwater levels before you site these systems, or you're going to pollute that groundwater. And you can see between a 50% rainfall and 100%, the groundwater rose from almost to 5 feet below the ground, below grade, to almost 2 feet. Here's an example of a surface failure in the wintertime due to high groundwater. In many of our counties, we don't have surface failures in the hot part of summer. They're primarily a groundwater-induced situation in the winter. This is a community in Shasta County where we dyed systems. People had not known for years that they were walking across sewage going to the post office in this case. And this area has subsequently been sewered, but it's an indication of the insidious nature of winter failures. We believe that statewide minimum standards are critical to this process. One, to prevent that pathogen contamination of groundwater, to prevent the effluent from surfacing, to control nitrates in the groundwater, provide proper system maintenance. It's another area we've noticed a lot of deficiencies and variability amongst the counties, and also to detect failures and or pollution so we can provide rapid corrective action. Now I'll go into the matrix. Basically, it's included as DWQ option 2 in your staff's recommendations. I'll basically go through the chart. This is the crux of it. It's a one-page document. It's been reduced substantially through discussions with other regional boards. Region 1 is in total concert with this, mainly because we use their model, or not their model, their basin plan guidelines as the basis for the soils criteria within this matrix. But we have added one thing at the top for nitrogen control, and that is it's lacking in your draft standards that your staff's presented, and that is minimum parcel sizes to control nitrate pollution, as in Los Osos, as in Chico. And those numbers across the top represent what we feel is the best science to minimum parcel sizes with conventional approach or supplemental systems. The left side of the matrix is basically set up for conventional systems. We believe that those soil depths provide some safety factor, that we don't need a great deal of monitoring associated with those systems. If they're installed according to that criteria, we should be protecting from pathogen and nitrate pollution. On the right side of that chart, on the other side of the shaded column, is the supplemental system area where we've proposed a reduction of soil depths to 2 feet with clay and silty soils and 3 feet is sandy. We believe that that's eliminating all safety factor, and that's why they're at the bottom of the matrix. We're asking for groundwater level monitoring and, if necessary, bacteria and nitrogen monitoring.
So Jim, how does this differ from the proposal?
It's in one of your, I think the proposal that your staff has is just a range of 3 to 5 feet for conventional systems. It doesn't break it down with soil type. It also proposes 2 to 3 feet for supplemental. The numbers are the same. I think it's basically presented differently. We have added, the difference here is we're not relying simply on existing domestic well monitoring. When you've eliminated the safety factor on the right side, we're asking for specific monitoring of individual systems. In today's economy, where lots that are being developed with septic tanks are 200,000 plus, the amount of monitoring is a small cost, and the work and the evaluation work is a small cost to assure that we're not polluting groundwater or causing surface water problems.
So you're saying if a lot is smaller than a half acre on a community water system, they would each lot would have to put in groundwater level monitoring?
That's correct. If they were going to go to the supplemental soil depth system of 2 feet or 3 feet. I should point out that the lot size on the top, we are intending only to be applicable to new land divisions. Existing parcels, repairs or replacements wouldn't be subject to those minimum standards.
So there are counties that are still permitting that size of lot on septics?
Yes, they are.
I'm very familiar with a lot of existing lots. In Mariposa.
No, there are counties who still allow half-acre systems on new land divisions, depending on the soil type. That's why I tried to make the point. There's 58 different standards in California, and they vary from 1 foot of separation to groundwater in some counties, seepage pits in others, just a huge range of variability.
I only have a lot of experience with two counties, so I know them pretty well in those two counties. And I don't think either one of them is permitting subdivisions like that.
Basically, the half acre number there in a community supply sense is right about the cusp that if you had that density in most hydrologic conditions in California, you would be getting close to the MCL for nitrates.
I guess as we move along here in the comments from other folks here today, I'm very interested in exploring some mechanism. If a county wants to come up with land use or general plan requirements that put some of these restrictions in the plan, then it seems to me we should be able to have it maybe a different set of standards. If you're willing to say there will be no septics on any new lots under 5 acres, period, and that's in your general plan, or if then the county's willing to take some of that.
Yeah, I think we were proposing
authority. It would make you wouldn't have a problem with that as long as they locked it into their land use policies or general plan requirements. Or
that's correct. And many counties do this. I would venture to say that most counties have probably that level of restriction on parcel size.
Yeah, there's just a couple on the coast
that
have a problem.
If there's an outliers there that we think these are what we're considering minimum standards. Again, this is the details in that the matrix evaluation criteria now is associated with the matrix. We think evaluation of a site is as critical as the prescriptive numeric standards. We find that a lot of counties have been telling us all along that they comply with our basin plan standards, which is 5 foot of separation, but they don't do evaluations and require the proper evaluations that they meet that standard. So there's ways to get around it. So we think with the prescriptive standards, you need some prescriptive evaluation minimum criteria. And that's what the second page offers, one for lot size, one to determine depth to groundwater. We think in most areas that's the most critical element. So we're specifying it be done at least 100% of precipitation, either modeled or actually measured. If you don't do that, you're going to have systems that discharge into groundwater directly. We also think the groundwater level monitoring is critical for supplemental systems and then the detection monitoring. And in summary, we think the soils evaluation criteria, it's administered today by the regional boards, which is very restrictive, but as implemented by the PAs, is not always protective of water quality. The water boards, we are responsible for protection of ground and surface water quality. California is usually seen as a leader in almost all programs in water quality protection as a nationwide leader. This is probably not true on on-site systems because we don't have statewide standards, and we allow or standards on county levels that sometimes are clearly not protective. These statewide regulation by waivers, and we all are compelled to do waivers. We're awaiting, in our region, the outcome of this process to determine whether a waiver, what type of waiver we'll issue. We certainly encourage the state board to do a waiver for all the region. That would eliminate 9 individual waivers. We think it should include rational soils, groundwater, lot size, and evaluation criteria. This is a unique opportunity. And we think if the water boards in concert with the PAs or local agencies can use this opportunity to improve water quality.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Mr. Milan, you had requested to introduce CCDH.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Justin Milan with the CCDH, the Environmental Health Directors, who for many, many decades have been doing the on-site wastewater treatment in your jurisdictions. Firstly, thank you very much for holding this workshop. We very much appreciate it. We very much appreciate the opportunity to make some points before your board. I've been working with your staff for 4 or 5 years now, and we've been butting heads on a couple of issues, and we are quite honestly looking for direction, collectively looking for direction. And I think it'll be helpful to have this interchange as a workshop where we can share ideas. And right from the get-go, I wanted to try and set the backdrop to some of our comments and some of the communication. And Terry Smithbauer, who's the chair of our Land Use Committee, will start off with the technical presentation. And the reason I wanted to stress the backdrop is we all hear after the same thing. We are environmental health. Our mission, our raison d'etre, is to protect health and the environment. We're not at odds with your board or the regional boards with the mission, with the goal of protecting water quality and protecting public health. It's just the approach. And I think in with what we say today, in the comments that have preceded this and follow this, I think it's important for us to stress that we want the same thing as you. It's just that we have seen
we could get to it a different way. And secondly, as local environmental health directors, as environmental health professionals, Mr. Giannopoulos' slide is maybe misrepresents that we oppose some of these things strictly on cost. It's not cost alone. It's the relative value of cost versus the effort and the risk. If we had buckets and buckets of money and we had the political support in our jurisdictions, we could probably do a whole lot more. In reality, we're the ones that have to make this program work. And it would be irresponsible for the environmental health directors, the public agencies, to say, yeah, let's go ahead and do it, and not be able to deliver. So in some cases, what appears to be a resistance to some of these provisions is not just because we feel it's too costly. The realtors and other people can deal with that. What we would like to implore you is to look at the relative cost to the risk associated and make sure that we put the best bang for the buck in a program that could add significant cost to the people and to the regulatory agencies. We haven't obviously seen the latest draft. We've seen some recommendations that were put up a week or so ago, and we want to stress to you that CCDH was there in the beginning. We supported AB 885. We are there right to the end. We want to make this process work, and whatever it takes, we'll be there to work with you and make it happen. We are happy that at least three of the provisions, or those five outlined, we are generally supportive of. And the only condition, the reason we say generally supportive, is if we haven't seen the specific language. But we can support the whole notion of the separation of groundwater, however that's going to work out. We can support the reduction in some of the prescriptive standards, but we implore you to actually enact some MOU requirements. 4 years ago, we drafted a model MOU, and we'd actually hope that every one of your regions would adopt that model MOU. So we have a process, because this cannot all be resolved by prescription. Part of this effort is to establish a process whereby the local, state, and even the feds know exactly who's responsible for what. The MOU is a great, great way to ensure that the locals have the appropriate authority, they have their marching orders, they know what their parameters are for their work and your regional board's work. So I do want to impress upon you to adopt some elements of that MOU that can help us. Very simply, we do support the need, absolutely support the need, for some level of monitoring and or inspection, what we would call a system review. Not just looking at the solids, it may require more than that. So we do want to see some monitoring. What we've been struggling with is the nexus and the presumption that has been made that the groundwater monitoring or the well monitoring is a direct reflection on the performance of the system. It may be. In some cases, it's not. And finally, we do actually want to impress that we are supporting the protection, additional protection of 303D impaired waters. It's not that we don't want to see those protected. We just have a different approach. So Terry will outline that approach. We think that we're pretty much there on three out of the five elements, and we'd ask you to give us direction and an opportunity to come back, maybe facilitate with the other stakeholders an alternative approach to those two key issues of the frequency of monitoring and the way we can best deal with the protection of 303D impaired waters. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Terry Schmidt-Bauer. As Justin said, I'm the Land Use Committee Chair for the California Conference of Directors of Environmental Health. I also am the Environmental Health Manager for the County of Solano in Northern California here. And what I'd like to do today is to go over, through this process, CCDH developed what we term the baseline draft that we submitted as comments to your staff and during this initial scoping study.
and I'd like to go over some of the key issues there. I'd also like to provide some comment on the recent recommendations that your staff proposed for this workshop as well. And I'm not sure where I'm supposed to point this. Just anywhere. Okay. Oop, back. And coming up with a alternative approach, we basically looked at what criteria we would need to have in a regulation. And one, we had to meet the legal mandates of AB 85. Besides that, as environmental health professionals, we also had the moral and ethical obligation to provide regulations that give us the tools to protect water quality and protect public health. We take that very seriously. And lastly, we, as part of regulators who have to implement this on a local level, we needed to be sure that whatever we come up with is implementable, which means it's got to be practical but protective, that it had to be flexible enough to address changing situations throughout the state of California. And since our resources are limited, as federal and state resources as well, and that's staffing and money, that we direct these resources towards areas of highest concern. And we feel that the baseline draft document that CCDH has prepared meets all these, that it provides the framework for protection of water quality, for protection of public health, while allowing the flexibility at the local and regional level to develop and build upon it with specific criteria. As you're aware, AB 85 has specific mandates, and one of those mandates is that it has to have minimum operating requirements. The baseline document specifically has, as terms of operations, requires permits for on-site wastewater treatment systems, and those systems have to comply with those permit requirements. It requires that the on-site wastewater treatment systems be maintained and be operated to protect water quality and public health, and allows us to require operating permits for supplemental treatment systems. As far as siting, it allows the PA to require a site evaluation and then specify some things that should be included in that site evaluation. It requires that the site evaluation be performed by qualified professionals, and that sites site with a lot with the septic system has to have 100% replacement area for that. As far as construction, let's go back. The design has to be based on wastewater quantity and quality and site and soil characteristics. Again, we leave it somewhat general so that the local agency can look at the specifics of the lot to see what's happening on there for that specific design. It requires that the effluent be dispersed into the unsaturated zone. It requires that the design be prepared by a qualified professional and prohibits burial of components of the septic system without inspection or without authorization, and allows us to require a plan. Oh, in the wrong one. On performance, again, it prohibits nuisances, vector attraction, discharge to land, creation of public health hazard. It allows the PA to perform periodic inspections, and it allows the PA to evaluate the treatment performance of on-site wastewater treatment systems. Again, there's a mandate from AB 85 that we address septic systems within adjacent to 303D waters, impaired waters. The approach we take with the CCDH baseline document is that we form the ALA and the regional boards get together to develop an improvement program plan where we look at septic systems in adjacent to the 303D water bodies, where it's been demonstrated that septic systems have been contributing to that impairment, and develop a plan for improvement on a watershed basis. This plan has to be developed within 24 months of adoption of the law and has to be implemented within 48 months. There's also provision in there that hopefully by, you know, luck or by work, we actually get these water bodies improved, that we can back off that improvement plan at that time. Our baseline document also has in there a similar requirement for groundwater basins where there's substantial evidence showing that septic systems are contributory to that impairment, that we get together with the regional boards and the ALAs and form an improvement plan and implement that. Now, these improvement plans...
How much more time do you need for your presentation. I really pushed both Mr. Giannopoulos and Mr. Pedri to keep their remarks to about 10, 12 minutes or so.
Okay. I apologize. Let me just finish up with the improvement plan then and go from there. We need about 5 minutes.
All right. 5 more minutes.
With these improvement plans, if they have to have the actions required, they have to have a time schedule for those actions to be taken, and they have to describe the surveillance that's going to occur within that improvement program area. Okay, so I think we'll just get that minimum operating requirements. Basically what we're proposing, focus the resources in the areas of concern 100 feet from impaired water bodies or within an improvement program plan, have a mandatory inspection of all septic systems once every 2 years or as prescribed, and then have the ability to sample the effluent from supplemental treatment systems in those areas. Let me just, and we meet the other mandates of ABA 85. I'd like to go a little bit into your staff recommendations. And I use numbers 1, 4, and 5. Basically, 1 would be the groundwater separation, 4 would be the reduction of the prescription standards, and 5 would be the statewide waiver. At this time, we could say we would lend conditional support to those recommendations. We would want, again, as Justin said, we'd want to see the wording on that and be sure that it's acceptable once we see the actual language. As far as number 2 and 3, we have some concerns with those. Number 2 is the monitoring of the groundwater. CCDH does support monitoring of groundwater wells in terms of public health, you know, human health issues. Obviously, people should be aware of what they're drinking. They should test that. Where we run into some concern is when we're using that data to form policy on on-site wastewater treatment systems without an understanding of what's happening there. You know, is there a problem with the wellhead? Is there a problem with the distribution system? What about the storage system? And you're probably going, you will be hearing from El Dorado County and Yuba County about what they found following up to the studies. And typically, these sorts of programs are more public health related, but we'll just leave it at that. As far as the monitoring of solid level in the tank, we're not really sure what that gains us. That seems to be a maintenance issue. And we would recommend it stay as a recommendation. We could probably live with the recommendation from staff that it be self-implementing on the owners, however. And so just in summary for the number 2, we don't feel that the groundwater monitoring will provide your board with the useful data as it's currently being suggested. That being said, what maybe the middle ground here is that we have well water monitoring so that we can educate the public as far as what they're drinking. You can gain some groundwater monitoring data. We have it at time of new construction or in association with the major repair when a permit's being issued. That way we have boots on the ground going out, looking at the septic system, looking at the well, and at least having in file somewhere some idea of what's happening on that site. And we can follow up with specific water well monitoring based upon the data we receive if deemed necessary. And we wouldn't even have to get the last thing there. We wouldn't need to get bogged down in the devil in the details. Maybe that's something we work out later between the regional board and the state water board within 12 months of adoption. Number 3, as far as that's the 303Ds. Again, what we would recommend is that, and I'm fishing up here, what we would recommend is that we use a CCDH baseline version where the regional board and the ALA sits down to work on a specific program improvement plan for areas that are impaired where it's been shown, septic systems have been shown to be a significant contributory to that. The problem we see is that without knowing significant, we may require extensive upgrade of these systems and not really have an impact on the water body. Also, we feel our document is a living document in that it's based on 2 years in and 4 years after a water body is listed versus set dates. And so with that, I'll finish up. We do have, I just want to say, we do have several speakers here today. And I don't know if you want to call them up individually or if you want me to introduce them, but we have people from El Dorado, Placer, Los Angeles speaking on, you know, the water quality testing, on technical issues, things like that.
I have their cards, and okay. I will pull them up individually.
Okay.
I wanted to give Mr. Milan and you the opportunity to speak first and to have some additional time, given your efforts on participating in this effort over the many years, and given the role that I believe the environmental health directors have in this very important issue. So I do appreciate your comments. However, I do not have anything in writing from you.
I got it right here. I sent the email. I think it came back, so I got it right here, so I can leave this.
All right.
Oh, boy.
Okay. With that, let's Mr. Mark Gold. Sorry, Dr. Mark Gold.
Thank you so much for taking me next. I got a plane to catch. I greatly appreciate that. The State Water Resources Control Board, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, California Department of Health Services, and local health departments clearly have not successfully regulated water quality from on-site systems, and that's why we're here. Impaired waters at beaches, creeks, and lakes, contaminated groundwater are some of the problems which you know all too well. We have variability from county to county. Board Member Baggett brought up the issue of acreage. L.A. County and some counties in the high desert allow seepage pits on parcels as small as 0.1 acres. So, I mean, that gives you an idea of how much things actually vary throughout the state of California and why we have the problems that we do. This is why Gila Bay sponsored AB 885 and worked very closely with Assemblyperson Jackson on this, as well as CCDEH and the state board. So this is all about minimum siting and performance standards to basically deal with one of the biggest water quality problems in the whole state of California that just has not been regulated or addressed to date, and that's obviously coming from on-site systems. Contrary to the summary that you've read on the regulation as it's written, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. As a matter of fact, it's the exact opposite of that. You have tougher requirements for systems next to 303 delisted waters. You have tougher requirements for major repairs and for new systems. That's not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's much easier on existing systems, especially in areas that aren't next to contaminated groundwater or contaminated surface water. Your staff has decided basically to come up with some recommendations that weaken the draft regulations and other ones that strengthen them. And I want to address those very briefly if I could. On the separation of groundwater, that definitely weakens the requirement, especially for nutrients, as your staff pointed out very, very clearly. And that's definitely a concern. On the conditional waiver provision, it's ambiguous. It's unclear what's going to actually be within the conditional waiver. As you yourself brought up, Chair Doduck, the issue of whether or not a general WDR makes more sense is something that needs to absolutely be addressed. We're very, very concerned about what happened during the MOU process and what happened from region to region on the on-site systems. And I can tell you in the L.A. region, our MOU was very, very weak, and one of the reasons why was they were waiting for all the direction on 885 from the State Water Resources Control Board that they were not getting. And so that definitely is a concern. We're happy to see that the inspection and monitoring requirements were strengthened. I can tell you, having participated in every aspect and every committee and negotiating these things, monitoring was not anything that a lot of stakeholders were really trying to push. I can tell you, as representative of the environmental community, we pushed it in a big way, but it was not that we were not getting a lot of suggestions from the stakeholders at the table on what monitoring level would be acceptable, which I think is very important to note. And then lastly and most importantly is we want to commend the state board for holding firm on the 303D provisions, but we still don't think they go far enough, and that's very, very important to note. A perfect example that Board Member Secundi saw firsthand at Region 4, we still see situations like we see in Mandeville Canyon where folks are getting permits to actually put seepage pits in the receiving waters themselves. So it shows you in that particular situation, downstream of that area where this ridiculously heinous construction is occurring, you have an F beach, an impaired water, an impaired beach that's on the 303D list, Will Rogers Beach, visited by 4 million people a year. But under the way the regs are written right now, they wouldn't have to have the 600-foot setback requirement, which is absolutely ridiculous if you think about you have the high bacteria problems that are there. So the setback provisions would not apply in that particular situation. And something that we strongly recommended earlier is that the section should be modified to include on-site systems adjacent to impaired waters or those waters tributary and upstream of impaired waters. We're not going to meet the requirements of a TMDL if you're not going to address that issue. And that's really where things are right now. The state has failed to meet statutory deadlines. These regulations were required to be in place more than 2 years ago, and the state and local government's performance on regulating environmental impacts from on-site systems has been poor at best. So this is really a great opportunity for the State Water Resources Control Board to rectify that egregious situation. Thank you.
Wait, Mark, I got a couple.
Thank you, Dr. Gold.
But the regional boards, if I'm not mistaken, have quite a bit of authority over using 13267s and other enforcement mechanisms if they believe a system's being put in too close to impaired water body and has a great potential of causing impairment. I guess maybe in Region 4 when John or Susan gets up, we can ask them.
Well, I'm sure they'll address it, but one thing that I know you know very, very well, prevention is a lot easier than once you've already had the problem. If they're going to have to enforce against every ridiculous development that's going in, as opposed to making it very clear what's required in the regulations and what's not, it's just much, much easier to deal with it up front than to have to go and seek out all the folks on enforcement. And that's exactly, as a matter of fact, what the regional board is doing in the Mandeville Canyon situation.
That's good. I guess, you know, the concern I have is that how you define these is 150 miles upstream, still upstream. I'm familiar with the Sierra and the Central Valley.
Right.
And there's no impairments until you get down towards the Delta is where most of the impairments are in the San Joaquin Sac system. So you're talking tributaries that could be 300 miles away from there, literally.
I'd love to answer the question. If you have receiving waters that exceed the TMDL numbers themselves, mm-hmm. That are upstream, then those are the ones that should okay. that should fall into the case. But if they're you know, basically at background levels, you're right. Who cares? I completely agree with that. But in this particular situation, you have high bacteria densities throughout that entire watershed, yet only part of it's listed. You know how imperfect the 303D listing process is.
I can't argue. I won't argue with you at all. I'll agree with you on the coastal issues. I'm concerned. You know, the one size fit all. The counties and the areas I'm very familiar with from years of experience don't do things like they do on the coast. They don't have quarter-acre subdivisions and half-acre subdivisions and 303 impairments. So I'm just making sure there's a flexibility where they've done a good job and enforced tough regulations, where you have 20,000 people and 1,200 square miles. It's a little different.
Well, I can't recall the name of the speaker who went from the regional board, but I'll tell you, one of the things that our organization made very, very clear, even in the legislative process, was that we were not concerned about that, you know, single-family home on a five-acre parcel that wasn't next to drinking water supply or receiving waters. That just wasn't of any concern to us.
Yeah.
So
good. Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Giannopoulos?
If I could make a clarification, the listing, the 303D impairment requirements in the proposed language in our recommendation applies only to impaired water bodies where the impairment has been identified by the regional boards as being due to or contributing to mm-hmm. by on-site systems.
So it's very specific. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gold. Ms. Susan Cloak, welcome, Chairwoman of the Los Angeles Regional Water Board.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Susan Cloak from the Los Angeles Regional Board, Chair of the Board. And my notes say good morning, but I'm going to say good afternoon. And I want to begin, like everybody else, to thank you for
really paying the kind of attention you're paying to this issue. Water quality is such a jigsaw puzzle. There's so many parts to it, and this is a key part. This is a part that, when this goes into the puzzle, many other things fall into place. So we really appreciate that. I have 4 points I want to make, and the first one is that I believe that the regulation should clearly articulate that sanitary sewers are the preferred treatment technology in urban areas in California. We have too many areas in the Los Angeles region that are really urban areas that are still on sewer systems. And again, like Mr. Baggett said, we're not talking about 100 people in 20,000 acres. We're talking about towns and little cities that don't have sanitary sewers. And so I think it's important to put into the regulations that that is the preferred treatment technology, and that there have to be findings as to why that can't be possible before any septic systems are allowed. Our regional board discourages the prolonged use of septic systems unless they can make the case that there's an isolated area and that it's not feasible to collect and that there is no threat to water quality. And they have to meet those two standards. Secondly, I think that the state board regulations should be the floor. They should be the minimum regulation. I'm not saying that they should be low, but they should be the minimum regulations that everybody in the state has to meet. And regional boards should have the opportunity to look at hydrology and geology and set higher standards as you are doing. And I just want to underscore that you are doing that. The water code provides that that this does not preempt regional or local agencies, regional boards or local agencies, from adopting or retaining standards that are more protective of public health or in the environment. And this is also consistent with the California Building Standards Codes, which preserves the authority to go beyond uniform code requirements to address local conditions. And we want to make sure that that stays as an important part of this. Third, I want to emphasize that there's a great difficulty in relying upon voluntary MOUs and ask that the state board's regulation actually not use that approach, but rather that you use the approach where the agencies submit a plan to the executive officer or to the regional board and that those plans get approved the way we do with many other permits and issues. And that is based on our experience with MOUs in the Los Angeles region, which, as Dr. Gold said, are partially weak because people have been arguing that we can't put in standards that are higher than the state standards, and since the state doesn't have these standards. And so we've had that argument, but we've had further and more difficult arguments with the MOUs. So I think we need a different approach to submitting a plan that gets approved by the executive officer, like we do with just about everything else. You know, you have a permit, you have to come up with your implementation plan and submit it for approval. And I think that that will help the regional boards. And those can be tailored individually. And my fourth and last point is that there's a real urgency to adopting these regulations. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Region 4 and tell you that nitrogen contamination of groundwater is a tremendous problem in developed areas, especially along the coast, but also in the rural areas in our district, which are in our region, which are undergoing rapid urbanization. And in many cases, local groundwater is really the sole and primary source of drinking water. We had this happen in Agua Dulce, which is in the northern part of Los Angeles County, where we had high concentrations of nitrate found in drinking water wells. And obviously, we're looking at public health, such as blue baby syndrome and other things that come from having these high nitrate levels in the potable water. El Rio is another community where septic systems result in exceedances of nitrogens and pathogens. And in fact, in 1999, we prohibited the septic systems. I'm almost done. Do you have an extra? Okay. I won't I will skip the list, which is about 15 areas, and describing our problems with groundwater in those areas, and tell you that, you know, that there are different issues having to do with vertical separation, horizontal separation, and so on, and just mention one area, which is Malibu, and tell you that we know that 20 to 30% of system failure rates in Malibu have been estimated to be 20 to 30%, even though they're right on Malibu Creek. And I want to close by saying to you that, first of all, that we will follow up today's presentation with suggested language revisions in the regulations themselves so that you can see how these things might be incorporated. And then again, just to thank you for helping us to protect the water quality in our region.
Thank you, Chairwoman Clark.
I've got a couple questions, I guess, to the region. I don't know, Susan, are you?
I think Mr. Bishop is here as well.
Whoever.
Answer questions.
You've got, I mean, the MOUs you've got, I know some counties have agreements with their regional boards, and it's a government-to-government agreement. Are yours, you have just two counties in the region, right?
We have.
The counties in our region declined to represent their cities with the MOUs, and since MOUs are voluntary, they have to agree to what's the conditions in those because they're memorands of understanding.
All the cities have to agree with. So it's
and
a little
the county
different.
Has to agree to what's in them. So if you set standards and then ask the regional boards to enter into MOUs to implement those standards, if the counties don't agree, they can turn it back over to the regions to issue WDRs.
What if there was an alternative? If that was an option, the regional board has to work with the county, as long as it's an option, not a mandate, so that you could have it, you could use the mandated, or if a regional board or county so chooses to come up with an agreement. I guess in your case, it wouldn't work. But I'm probably, this is the statewide regs here. These aren't just for region
right.
four.
What we found was that because the MOUs required both sides to agree, and we were asking for more stringent standards than
right.
what were being done today, we didn't get agreement.
I do think, though, that that putting an option in a statewide policy and letting regional but putting
right.
the choice of the option to the regional board.
Right.
So that if it looks like entering into an MOU is the better way to go to get consensus, agreement, you know, political support and so on, then there's no reason not to have it in as long as it's an option. And if another region finds itself in the situation that we have found ourselves in, that we can then have the authority to require certain standards.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Hillary Hauser of Hill the Ocean.
Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you. I'm Hillary Hauser, Director of Hill the Ocean in Santa Barbara. We represent 3,000 members, and we are 95% of our work is focused on wastewater problems, but mainly septic. We're facilitating the Rincon Septic to Sewer Project that when we started this in 1997, it inspired Assemblyperson Hannibeth Jackson to get this bill rolling and also bring into Santa Barbara County $2 million for the purpose of septic to sewer work. We work with the Environmental Health Department and the services and also with the Regional Board. And we've been waiting for this legislation for a long time because we do need regulatory help. The Central Coast Regional Board has taken us about 7 years to get them on board to give us a resolution supporting the sewer project for Rincon, where there are 75 homes that on septic systems, and the surfers have started complaining about getting sick, and it turns out that the septic systems there are in groundwater, and they are some of them are redwood, and in fact some houses are for sale right now that are redwood septic systems, and so we do need this regulatory help. We've been waiting for it for a long time. We really appreciate the state board holding firm on the meat of this bill, and I support what Dr. Gold said about holding tight on some of the tough thing. The performance standard, the staff recommendation, to lower this to 3 to 5. By the staff also has given the shown that pathogen survival time in unsaturated soil is 100 days, and that these nitrate can eventually reach groundwater. Heliocean is really concerned about the transport to the ocean through shallow groundwater, the leach fields. We have leach fields on creeks. We have 9,000 septic systems in Santa Barbara County, a whole town on septic systems on a 303D water body. So that if a lot becomes unbuildable, really the water board, I don't know that that's a business of the water board, but the requirement for supplemental treatment is not so you have to have supplemental treatment. What's happening is the business of cost comes up and up and up, and right now in Santa Barbara County, you pay $24 a year for septic system. Most of us pay $900 to $1,000 for sewer service. So the fact that this is going to cost more to treat our waste properly has to be put in perspective. Monitoring, it's definitely the leach field. It's just as important as the level of solids and the impaired water bodies. I really hope that the State Board will hold the line on the January 09 deadline for the existing septic system having to have supplemental treatment and not waiting until 2015. We really have to get moving on this. The point of sale, it just seems so obvious that the realtors should want to protect their sellers and protect their buyers. There are people that buy houses that don't even know what their underground plumbing is. And underground plumbing is just as important as roof on the house and termites. And if the monitoring, they're talking about cost again, 4 wells, $6,000 to $18,000. In the case of Rincon, if the community splits that cost for monitoring, it's about $240 a year. It's still low. So, I'm sorry of going around, but we really, Heliocean, have been waiting for this legislation. We need it. We need it to help us get through the Rincon, which is about ready to be stamped for approval by the Carpinteria Sanitary District. We are picking up the price of the extra EIR work and the legal costs. There are three people out of 175 homeowners along this area that we're dealing with that are throwing lawsuits. They've lost them all, but we're paying those legal bills. And if we had a regulation like this, it would really help us, because they've got major problems down there. The DNA test shows septic effluent in the Rincon Lagoon, which is 303D. We've got major problems. And the environmental health doesn't have the teeth to deal with it, and nor does the regional board. We need to work on this together. So let's keep going. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are running later into the afternoon, so I will ask people to please keep your comments as brief as possible and to not repeat those comments of others who spoke before you. Ms. Curry McNeil of Delta Keeper.
Bring this down to my height. Good afternoon, Chair and members. I just wanted to first of all state that on behalf of Delta Keeper and Baykeeper, we support Dr. Gold's comments earlier and really recognize this as a statewide problem. As you all know, the Delta incorporates so many rural communities, and as a former country girl myself, I've owned property where the groundwater well